Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, November 15th, 2011 Carrboro Board of Aldermen regular business meeting. We are going to begin tonight, as we do at our regular business meetings, to hear any requests from visitors and speakers from the floor. If you're here, in other words, to speak on a matter that's not already on our printed agenda, I'd like you to indicate that somehow to me right now. All right. I'm not seeing anybody. I'm going to move on to I believe we don't have any proclamations, so we will move on to the consent agenda. Mr. Manager.
Item number one is approval of minutes of previous meetings. Item number two is consideration of an appointment to the Recreation and Parks Committee. Item number three is a reimbursement resolution for capital equipment and vehicles. And item number four is a resolution authorizing the town manager to enter in an agreement with NCDOT for bridge inspection work.
Yes, ma'am.
I would like to pull item number four just for a word change.
All right. I'll take that as a motion for item.
I have a minutes correction.
Okay. So I'll take that as a motion and a second for items two and three on the consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. What's the
all
correction?
Opposed. What's the correction on the minutes?
Well, I'd like the resolution to also to be a resolution authorizing the interim town manager and have interim inject it.
Okay.
Just so in case we need the interim town manager to do it. It's just a formality.
Okay.
I think we need that.
That's very good.
Okay.
All right. With that amendment, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed.
On page 12 of the minutes, I believe we need to cite the library with an S before we can cite it with a C.
All right, then. Fine with it?
Everyone's an editor. All right. With that change, we'll have we'll consider that a motion for item one with that change. All those, is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. And that brings us to item D1, consideration of appointment to Environmental Advisory Board. Does anybody have a motion?
I would kind of be inclined to appoint the person who's lived here a year over the person who's lived here 3 months.
Second.
But I need to find my sheet, which tells me which one is where.
That's
all right. Okay.
Does someone have that handy? Though?
Hiram Dustin Shikuro Bayard.
I'll second.
Well, is that right? Is that the one?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Okay. So it's been moved and seconded for Hiram. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Matter passed unanimously.
And I do hope
better luck next time, Mikey.
Yeah. Well, he should keep his name.
No, I'm and
right.
I say that
you
jokingly,
should,
but I'm serious.
Keep your name. Don't we normally keep their name?
We do.
Yeah, it'll stay on file. Okay. Item D2, request to make an appointment to the planning board. Does anyone have any comments or motion?
Go ahead, Dan.
I don't. I mean, I would be, when we get to our regular appointments time in February, we'll be close to Deborah's anniversary of going off the planning board, and I would be willing to consider her application then. I think that would be appropriate, but I don't see any reason at this juncture to violate or make an exception from the one-year off rule that we have. So,
Deborah's been term-limited off of the planning board, or was
right
almost a year ago.
A year before she goes on again.
Right, so she's supposed to wait for a year. She's making a case here for waiting.
And I think it was
9 months
March,
instead.
That's what we were told.
That's just 3 months though. Well,
do well
right,
but,
that's why
but,
I say
but it's all but that argument fits, you know, goes both ways. It's just 3 months, but it's just 3 months. So, what were you going to say, Lydia?
I hear what Dan's saying too. I mean, and we don't really meet in December. I mean, and when I look at expertise otherwise unavailable, I mean, she was just a fine member of the board, and she has the knowledge she learned as a member of the board. You know, it's. And there was a time where we, I don't know about lack of qualified applicants, we now have several I think most, if not all of, maybe but one of the positions filled. And I know we had to decide the lack of females on the board, and now we have them. I mean, I'm inclined to go either way. It doesn't really matter to me.
I just want to come behind what Dan's saying and say, just as a matter of consistency, I'd rather wait till February, March, or whenever that time is fulfilled.
Okay. And is this the only application that we have on file then at the moment for this?
For the planning board?
Jeez. Really?
That's all surprising.
All right. Well, you bring up one. You said the lady who's retiring from the board after 12 years. not surprised. All right. You're not about to submit your name? Is that what you're telling us?
No, she's going to wait till February.
All right. Well, hearing no motion on the matter right now, I'm going to move forward to item D3, presentation of comprehensive annual financial report fiscal year 2011.
We have a representative here from the town's auditor, Dixon Hughes Goodman, to give a brief presentation. You should have a copy of the CAFR at your place, as well as a copy of what he's about to show.
Yes, please. Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the board. Again, my name is John Frank with Dixon Hughes Goodman. Appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come by this evening and briefly discuss the town's audit report for fiscal 2011. Just like to primarily focus on this one-page handout that each of you should have in front of you, in addition to the bound audited financial statements. This handout summarizes some of the changes from fiscal 2010 to fiscal 2011. So have y'all been able to locate that with your materials? I think we have a lot of information there. As a result of our audit this year, we did issue a clean audit opinion. That's the highest form of assurance that we as auditors can present on a set of financial statements. We did not identify any findings or material weaknesses in internal controls or other management letter items. If you could focus on the handout, under Roman numeral 1, we've shown the change in cash and investments from fiscal 2010 to fiscal 2011. You can see that cash and investments were down about $1.1 million from the end of fiscal 2010 to the end of fiscal 2011. Most of this decrease was attributable to spending of restricted cash and investments, primarily unspent debt proceeds. So your unrestricted cash actually went up about $1.8 million from fiscal 2010 to fiscal 2011. Roman numeral 2 shows the general fund available fund balance, which was $10.8 million at the end of fiscal 2010 and $11.2 million at the end of fiscal 2011, basically due to general fund revenues exceeding general fund expenditures for the year. And if you look at Roman numeral 3, we've just shown a breakdown of general fund revenues and other financing sources. Total general fund revenues for the year amounted to $17.9 million, which were up slightly, just $89,000 or about the half of a percentage point from fiscal 2010. Some categories of revenues were up, others were down. The individual category that showed the most significant increase was ad valorem taxes, which were up about $172,000 year over year. As you know, your tax rate stayed the same, but there was a overall increase in the value of taxable property during the year, and a slight increase in the tax collection rate as well, which led to this increase in ad valorem taxes. Local option sales taxes also increased by about $73,000 between fiscal 2010 and fiscal 2011. As you may or may not recall, in fiscal 2010, local option sales taxes were actually down $97,000. And even though you had an increase in this category, you're still not back to 2008-2009 levels. So I think it shows that probably the local economy, at least as reflected by sales tax collections, has improved slightly, but still not back to the 08-09 levels. Unrestricted intergovernmental revenues were up this year. This was primarily due to an increase in the beer and wine excise tax distribution from the state. If you recall, in fiscal 2010, the General Assembly withheld a portion of this distribution, and you got it back in 2011. So that is that's why this category was up. There were some categories that were down. Unrestricted intergovernmental revenues was down due to there being fewer grants in the general fund this year. That category was down about $93,000. And the category of permits and fees, which is about three-fourths of the way down on this chart, also showed a decline of about $85,000, primarily due to there not being as many construction projects, which generally lead to the collection of these types of fees. So overall, general fund revenues were budgeted at $17.2 million. And came in at $17.9 million. So there was a $657,000 positive variance between actual and budgeted general fund revenues. If you'd like to see the budget to actual comparison, that's on page 20 of the bound audited financial statements. You can see in a little more detail there what makes up these totals on page 20. And just moving down this summary on Roman numeral 4, we summarized expenditures. Overall, expenditures were up about $804,000, primarily due to capital outlay expenditures, planned capital outlay expenditures in the general fund. But again, if you look on page 20, even though your expenditures were up from the prior fiscal year, they did come in at about $1.7 million below what had been authorized in the final amended budget. Expenditures were budgeted at $19.3 million. Actual were $17.5 million, so you had a positive variance of about $1.7 million between actual and budgeted expenditures. And under Roman numeral 6, we've just shown the percentage of available fund balance to budgetary basis expenditures and transfers out. That percentage stayed about the same. It went from 65.67% to 64.68%. So, again, even though your expenditures increased, the fund balance increased pretty much in proportion to that increase in expenditures. The North Carolina Local Government Commission pays attention to this statistic in evaluating the health of your general fund. They recommend that you have at least an 8% ratio of expenditures, of fund balance to expenditures. As you can see, you're well within that that percentage. And the last thing we've shown on this summary is the property tax collection percentage, which has been high historically. In fiscal 2010, it was 98.87%. And it was actually up to 99.02% for fiscal 2011. So overall, I guess the takeaway from all this is that the town's fund balance improved, remains at a healthy level, and the town management was able to come in below budgeted expenditures, and due to a variety of reasons, budgeted revenues ended up being a little better than what you'd anticipated. And I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have about the audit or the this financial summary.
Jackie.
Thank you very much. It's good news in bad times. So I guess the good news is that for hard times, we're doing pretty well. I wanted to know, generally, like in comparison to other towns, mm-hmm. are other towns experiencing the same kind of slow uptick, I hope? Or do you know?
You know, it's too early to tell. The you know, the local government commission usually doesn't publish statistics by municipalities until, you know, well into the next yeah. calendar year. I mean, my guess would be it probably depends on the region of the state that they're in.
So anecdotally,
I know certainly a lot of units budgeted to use appropriate a lot of fund balance this year, which the town did budget
right.
to do, but fortunately, you were able to build your fund balance. Mm-hmm. So, I would suspect most units, had a real challenging environment to deal with this year, though.
Yeah. Thank you.
Joel.
It's miscellaneous. Even though it's not a lot of money. I'm just curious what was miscellaneous.
Well,
would you characterize it?
If you want to, it's really everything doesn't fall into any of the other categories.
Okay.
But if you'd like to see the detail that makes up miscellaneous, in the bound report, in the back, there's a detailed schedule of budgeted to actual revenues, and that would be on page 63. Basically consists of sales of lots, refuse
okay.
cart sales, yard waste container sales, farmers market rent, donations, and then there's another miscellaneous.
So. Truly miscellaneous.
Yeah. Truly miscellaneous. Okay. That'll work. That's it.
Okay.
All right. Are there other questions? All right. Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time and attention. I'd like to thank Arch McAdoo. And Nancy Ainsley for their help with the audit this year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're very proud of their work. Thanks, guys. All right. I think that brings us to item D4 presentation.
Oh, we had a resolution.
Oh, I'm sorry. We do.
Room.
Yes.
You're
right.
Second report.
Okay.
Second.
Been moved and seconded by. Moved by Dan, second by Samuel. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. Item D4, presentation of the capital improvements program.
My pleasure to be here tonight to present the recommended capital improvement program for fiscal year 2012-2013 through fiscal year 2017, and that should be 2018. As a brief overview, the objective of a capital improvement program is to plan for the repair, replacement, and acquisition of capital items and facilities necessary to deliver the high-quality services to our residents. It ensures the coordination, evaluation, and prioritization of planning projects and planning of projects to serve the community and its needs. It assists in financial planning by matching capital demands together with future revenues and expenditures, and it helps maintain the town's credit rating and fiscal health through strong budgetary and financial planning. First, I'm going to go through a couple of the recent CIP accomplishments based on previous years' approved capital improvement programs and budget documents. As you know, we're well into the Weaver Street reconstruction project. A little bit of breaking news for the crowd here. Phase 4 was asphalt was laid today, and we anticipate beginning on Phase 5 Thursday.
Big hand for public work.
Sidewalks. In 2003, the voters of Carrboro approved a sidewalk and greenways bond. And of those projects that were budgeted out of those bond proceeds, we've completed all 10 of the Phase 1A projects and half of the Phase 1B projects. And the Phase 1B projects are on track to be completed by the end of 2013. And a couple of items of vehicles and equipment that are of a substantial nature are the new boom truck in Public Works and the new brush truck in the fire department. And I just have some examples. This is the phase one Weaver Street that's now been completed and open for several months. Phase two, you can see as the construction has been moving down. This is the Ash Street sidewalk project. It was one of the sidewalk bond projects. And Bim Street, another sidewalk bond project. There is the new boom truck for Public Works.
And how much did that cost? About.
I do not know the answer to that. It was.
The order is $4,000.
Oh, that's not bad.
And the brush truck for the fire department. A summary of the projects that are in this CIP document. There are a number of new projects in here as well as a number of returning and maintenance projects. I'll go through some of the projects here. The recommended CIP, it represents an increase of about $2.9 million over the current CIP, and that's due to a couple of the projects that were added to it, several that were mandated by the Jordan Lake rules, and you'll see there's about $700 worth of stormwater projects that are included in reaction to the Jordan Lake rules, and then the rest of the increases mostly lie within the greenways category. The greenways category includes three new proposed projects. The downtown multi-use path, which would connect Greensboro to Lloyd Street. The Jones Creek Greenway, which brings the town's greenway system north of Homestead, connects and will connect to the Twin Creeks and Bowling Creek Phase 1B. And the Carborough High School multi-use path, which will connect the Morgan Creek Greenway to BPW Road. And the park maintenance and repair category. This is an item that's been proposed in several CIPs and is not currently funded. This item allows us to strategically plan for the orderly upkeep of the town's parks rather than funding out of general fund as they become needed during the year. This will allow the Recreation and Parks Department to strategically plan for maintenance and repair of the parks. The public works facility is currently pushed out beyond 1718. As you may remember from the CIP document, this is probably the most needed item on the CIP, but as it's currently planned, it'll be the most expensive capital project the town has ever undertaken. It's not feasible to fund with debt at this point, and there needs to be further conversations about how to fund the construction of that facility. So it's still out there on the sort of to-be-planned section of the CIP. Let's see. On the sidewalks, you'll notice that there are no projects planned past year 2013-2014. That's due to the need for staff to focus on finishing the sidewalk bond projects before the bonds are issued. So we've not planned any projects past that point. Street resurfacing is budgeted every year, and the maintenance is done every 2 years. So this current year does not include any allocations for street resurfacing. There will be a street resurfacing project in the next budget year. The information technology category includes a couple of mandated items, specifically street sign maintenance system, which is a Federal Highway Administration mandate. It includes other items such as in-car video for the police department, updated financial system for the town, document scanning and GIS integration for the town, and it also includes a small budget for website improvements for the town. And there will be plenty of time to further discuss that during the budget process. And the last item is the stormwater management category. As I mentioned, these are mandated by the Jordan Lake rules. Beginning in year 2014, we'll be required to complete two of these stormwater management projects every year. Currently, there are two projects budgeted in the CIP. Each project is large enough to count for two projects, so it'll cover us for 2 years. Here's the projected cost of the capital improvement program as it's laid out. The majority of the CIP is for new projects. About 30% is related to the maintenance of our current capital and equipment. The emphasis for this coming budget year and the following year are to complete the sidewalk bond projects, continue to replace equipment and vehicles. You'll notice that in the vehicle and equipment replacement schedule, the two large capital items that were delayed last year, which include a pumper truck for the fire station and a front-end loader for solid waste, are included in the projected 2012-2013 capital improvement. Continue the street resurfacing project and finalize the design for Morgan Creek and Bowling Creek Phase 1B greenways. These are the funding sources for the capital improvement program. As in past years, the majority of the projects are to be financed with debt, either installment financing or general obligation bond. And this is a brief examination of some of our debt ratios. As you can see, the town is above the average LGC ratio, but is well below the high threshold. And the down here in the budget strain category, this is sort of what the rating agencies are going to be looking at when we go to issue the bonds in 2013-2014. The acceptable level is 10%. We remain below 10% during the rating period, except for fiscal year 2016 and 2017. So what that means is between now and then, there's needs to be discussion by the board on whether they want to continue funding these projects through debt or through setting aside some revenues or fund balance to pay for it, because at that point we will not be able to issue the debt. And the trigger for that, that's going to cause us to go over that threshold, that's the year that the Martin Luther King Park project is budgeted, and that's what's going to cause that big increase in the debt level. And finally, the list of unfunded projects remains substantially the same as in previous years. Town hall renovations, a town gymnasium, local road improvements, an outdoor swimming pool, and improvements to Roberson Street. These are projects that have been identified in the past as capital priorities but have not had funding allocated. And staff recommendations for the board to adopt and receive the recommended CIP document. And I'll be happy to answer any questions, and most of our department heads are here if you have questions for them as well.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions on CIP?
I just have a comment. Because I think, you know, there are people in the audience and people watching at home who perhaps haven't looked at this document, and this is a really key planning document for the town and understanding our capacity to take on projects that the community desires in the future. And what we've just heard from the town manager is that we're very constrained financially in the years ahead to even do the things that have already been adopted as priorities. And I often, you know, especially having just come off the campaign trail, you hear from citizens, well, can't we buy this or can't we build that? And there are a lot of wonderful things the town can do that are not currently in our plan. So I want to recommend this document to citizens who want to understand, you know, how the town does go about making capital purchases and how our ability to do so has to be planned over time. And for the press who are here, to whatever extent you can help to convey that in your reporting, I think that would be a good service to the community.
It's a good point. Yeah, go ahead.
Question. Matt, I missed the opportunity in our consent agenda, and I'm fine with our, of course, having passed it, but I did want to ask the question, and it's related to this, that we are able to defer the purchasing of two vehicles because it was determined that there was low mileage and maintenance costs. And so my question was, is that a regular assessment that happens, or did we do that because we needed to find money to buy this equipment?
The Public Works Department, and specifically the Fleet Maintenance Division, on an ongoing basis reviews our vehicles for mileage and maintenance costs. the three vehicles that were deferred so that we could purchase the radios all had well below the accepted level of mileage. And Public Works has an idea on how to kind of recirculate those vehicles within the town, and that's going to allow us to put some more miles on the vehicle and not have to purchase additional vehicles.
Okay, right.
Another example that's not highlighted in something we're doing tonight, but that the Public Works Department did as part of the CIP, is we're all aware of the impact of the closing of the county's landfill in 2013. And in order to avoid purchasing two new front-end loaders, the Public Works Department is going to be able to hold on to an old front-end loader as a reserve for another year to delay one more year of expense on that front-end loader to enable us to go forward and accomplish our goals without having to take that extra financial hit in the next budget year. So those kind of items are looked at on a continual basis.
Great. Yeah, that's important, especially given the economy, but always.
All right.
Yes. Now, great job with the capital improvements program. When I came on the board in 1999, it wasn't as finely tuned as it is now, so big hand clap for staff for continuing that. The second thing is, for the future, I'd like the board to think about when the middle school property, when they start developing the middle school, I think the board needs to have some interim discussions with both the county commissioners and the school board with the idea that might be a good place for everyone to collaborate in terms of a gymnasium, because that might be the only time, unless the town starts playing the lottery, to have enough money to construct a gymnasium. And that's just a long-term suggestion that y'all can look out 5 to 7 years, because I don't think they're planning to build a middle school any sooner than that. And I would suggest that you kind of put it on your radar screen, because that would be a way to save lots of money and to provide a good asset for the town. I know it's not even in the capital improvement program, but it would be a way to do it. So just kind of
all right.
Put it on one of those tag items and it'll be brought up again.
All right. Thank you. I want to say to you, Mr. Manager, thank you for doing this, bringing this to us. It's not all good news, but it's all reality and something we need to understand. I know you and all of your department heads and Art and Nancy have all worked hard on putting this together. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, we have a resolution here, which I will move accepting the report.
Second. Okay. It's been moved and seconded.
It's actually adopting.
Adopting the, the motion is adopting the recommended CIP. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. Thank you. All right. Now we get to the easy part. Item 5 on our agenda, the continued public hearing on land use ordinance text amendment related to modification of B1GCZ.
I believe Trish McGuire, planning director, has some brief comments.
Good evening, everyone. The applicant for the request in front of you this evening is Ken Ryder of Belmont Serre. The requested action is to modify the B1G conditional zoning district to provide a means for approving additional residential density in association with a conditional zoning request. The type of action is legislative zoning decision, and the Board of Aldermen received staff and applicant presentations and discussed this amendment request on June 14th and September 27th, and requested revisions to the draft ordinance on September 27th, and that's what we're bringing back to you this evening. The actions requested on September 27th included the following: deletion of one item in the draft ordinance regarding the inclusion of on-site vehicle charging as an example of an energy conservation measure. The next request was to move one item to from an optional element that could be included in a conditional zoning district to make it a mandatory component of B1G conditional zoning, and to set a threshold of 25% non-residential for developments that would pursue use of this this amendment regarding the addition of residential density and conditions associated with these building and site elements. Those changes were both made. In regards to the second one, there was a timing mechanism added to the ordinance in conjunction with this requirement for non-residential development, and that mechanism would limit the issuance of certificates of occupancy for residential floor area in a development going forward under this rezoning to no more than 3-to-1 in proportion to the non-residential floor area, because that would be the ultimate build-out under a 25% requirement for non-residential. I also want to note to you that the applicant for this amendment, this text amendment, has indicated that the 25% non-residential requirement and the timing mechanism in particular are not workable for the project that they are bringing forward, which is the subject of our next next continued public hearing. And the 20% non-residential component does appear to be workable, both in conjunction with the timing mechanism and overall for the project. The statement provision of affordable housing was added as one of the site and building elements to the draft ordinance we provided to you, and there is a fresh copy of it at your places this evening, because we noticed that there was some numbering, there was a numbering error essentially in the list of site and building elements, we also noted in doing a close read of it that we should substitute the language that was indicating that the non-residential component would be an optional element, and substitute the affordable housing one. So I've got that on a slide here to show you what's indicated in the version at your places, the yellow text that's struck through here is the previous language that would indicate that someone was selecting to include a minimum of non-residential space, and since you've in the draft ordinance proposed that would be a requirement, that language isn't needed in this part of the draft of the ordinance, since the language referencing the provision of affordable housing as, again, an optional element that someone could choose to propose to the board as a condition of conditional zoning under this provision, that language is offered as a substitution. And then the correction to the numbering is just shown below. We had two gaps in the numbering, and so we've renumbered it, so now there are a total of 13 provisions shown in the ordinance at your places. This is a summary of the site and building elements and how they, what's the language. There's also language in the draft ordinance that suggests that the intention is that there would be at least three items selected from at least three of these categories. So the numbered items are noted below. These are reflecting the items in subsection F of the draft ordinance 15141.4, and which of those items fall under these headings of stormwater management, water conservation, energy conservation, energy production, alternative transportation, affordable housing, and public art and amenities. And just this is the provision that before said not a minimum non-residential component, so we just substituted that language for the affordable housing piece.
Trish, is there any weight given to these?
No, there are no. I mean, that would be something that would be in the context of conversation with an applicant.
So there's no difference between a piece of sculpture and an affordable housing as far as?
Not in the ordinance. I mean, there is a broad opportunity for the board to discuss the weighting of those elements in the context of this type of requested rezoning. Another approach would be to establish some weights that wasn't the approach that was put forward at this time.
Joel.
would we have to have, or the next future board, would they have to have another hearing or start the process over if they wanted to add weights? That is, if we wanted to give more weight to affordable housing or energy production or alternative transportation than we would, for example, public art or amenities?
It would be a different ordinance. I think we would have to, we would probably want to advertise it again. That would be my take on it. Is Mike nodding over there?
Can't
see him.
Sammy, did you have a question?
I just had there seems to be that we skipped from 10 to 12 in F. There's a missing F11 in this.
That's right. Sorry.
I'm just curious why that's.
That's what
here.
You just referred to, that they renumbered them. We have the new one.
Oh, I see. Okay, cool. Thanks.
All right.
So this action is in front of you. The packet includes the draft ordinance, well, now the revised draft ordinance at your places, pardon me, and the resolutions of consistency that are needed prior to taking action on it if you choose to do so.
Okay.
Mr. Attorney, We have this public hearing on this land use ordinance text amendment, and then we have another public hearing immediately following on our agenda on land use ordinance map amendment related to four properties at near 500 North Greensboro Street. I guess we don't need sworn testimony in either of these.
That's
hearings.
Correct.
Okay, so I have, I think, about eight people signed up to speak, so we can take their whatever they have to say into account in making decisions on both of these public hearings.
But you don't want to clarify to the speakers, like, what the significance of speaking on one item versus the other is? Because people might support the text amendment without supporting the rezoning, or vice versa, the map amendment.
Well, you know. That's a fair point, although I think they'll have the opportunity to let us know that. I mean,
okay, so we're going to hear from everyone before. So we're going to get the other presentation first, then.
Well, that's an interesting question.
Because you know,
let me look how many people.
Depending on what happens with one, that determines what we need to do for the other.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Right, but I don't think it's appropriate to hear testimony on whether people think the map amendment should be applied to 500 North Greensboro
Street.
There
isn't a map amendment.
Right. We need to hear, if people have opinions on whether or not the town should have the map amendment available as a tool. That's what we should hear now.
Dan, that's what I was saying.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry to be dense.
So how will people know? This is almost like planning ordinance legalese. You know, are we going to say, nope, hold that thought and sign up again?
Maybe we can explain.
I'm just saying.
You have to tell them up front.
Well, I mean, I've 12 people I have signed up. So, I think the fastest, well, probably the most efficient way is to go ahead and hear from all these folks.
Or explain which one we need to hear first, and the order in which we need to hear it. So if they really want to make a comment on the second one, they can.
Or we
wait.
Can.
Or they can come back.
Well, except that if the change is not passed, then the second item is mute.
It's not as relevant. all right, so. Let me take a stab at this then. For those of you who signed up to speak, what the board is currently discussing is that we have, in fact, two different requests before us tonight. One is to make changes to what is possible or what is allowed in a zoning district called B1G. CZ, the B1G Conditional Zoning District. And the other item is whether or not to apply that particular zoning district, if it is created, to 500 North Greensboro Street specifically. the creation, in other words, the creation, the item we're on right now, item five on our agenda, if it passes, or some form of it passes, will make some new things possible to do in a zoning district called B1G, conditional zoning. Right now, there are, Trish, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Are there any properties in Carrboro right now that are zoned B1G conditional zoning, B1G CZ?
One of the four lots included in this request is currently zoned B1G CZ.
Okay, right. So there is one lot.
Yeah, and procedurally, since you did hold the hearing on June 14th, I mean, you can discuss both of these items together. You don't have to absolutely conclude your conversation when you decide to close the hearing. It's not necessary for you to completely separate them because of the type of action that's in front of you.
I see.
So.
Okay, so I will ask this question. Of these 12 people I have signed up here, is there anybody that, based on what I've been describing to you, that wants to speak specifically to the question of whether or not to create, to make these changes to B1G conditional zoning, or are all of you really wanting to speak, or most of you really wanting to speak on the question of whether to rezone 500 North Greensboro Street? Do you follow the question I'm asking? All right, so if you want to speak on whether or not we should make some changes to the B1G conditional zoning district, I would ask you to raise your hand right now. If you don't raise your hand right now, then I'm going to call you on you in a few minutes instead, and so that you can speak on the question of whether to apply this zoning district to 500 North Greensboro Street. All right, are you with me? So. Do people have – is there anybody who has specifically something they want to say about B1G – about a modification to the B1G conditional zoning district? Okay. Maybe one. Yes. Mr. Carnahan, would you come up, please?
Can I just add something? And if it's really confusing for anyone, I would suggest you come up sooner than later, and we can – make that distinction.
We'll manage to sort
we'll
it out.
We'll make it
yeah.
more confusing.
Figure it out.
So then this means that I would also, because I support the project, want to come back later on to make further comment about that? Or
all
can
right.
I make all my comments?
then we'll – that's fine.
Okay.
That's a different public hearing.
Well, I just –
I am going to be using the timer tonight, so
good.
It will be a three-minute timer.
My name is James Carnahan. I live on Oak Street here in Carver, and I support the project. I sent you all an email Friday with some comments. I would like those written comments to be included as part of the record, as part of my comments on both the rezoning and the map amendment. The two items on tonight's agenda really highlight how important this is. Both of those items attest to the challenge that we have to achieve things in Carrboro economically, to build the facilities in the community that we want. Both the capital improvements project and the audit really emphasize the importance of this. And I think that our zoning needs to continue the objectives that we established in 2000 when we adopted the Vision 2020 to relieve the financial burden on residents, to increase our economic base, our commercial base, and to do that with higher density in the downtown. And so that's my primary interest in seeing this zoning is having additional flexibility to achieve more density in the downtown, more intensity, and I think having both residents and commercial activity, and in this case, renting is a commercial activity. And that
as challenged as we've been, the people who wanted to take advantage of the zoning changes we made following the downtown charrette, it's been very difficult in the lending environment for any of the projects that we've already approved to get built. And I think getting this project approved, having the ordinance be flexible enough to allow the approval of the project that they want to build, this helps to demonstrate our commitment to achieve these economic and social and transportation goals that would be facilitated by the construction of this project. Thank you.
Thanks, James.
I do want to say I think more flexibility on how much, what the percentage of commercial component. I'm okay with 15 or 20%. It doesn't need to be 25.
Sure goes against 10 years ago.
Okay. So with that, board members, are there other questions you have at staff? Or did the applicant want to say something about the text amendment in particular? Okay, why don't you come up, Mr. Ryder?
Members of the board, thanks for your time, and appreciate staff and everyone's effort into trying to figure out something that can work on the site. I think there's a presentation I have that's kind of covers both areas, so I might save that for later because I think we'll have an opportunity to go through it. But in particular, I'd like to talk about the 25% or 20% and kind of piggybacking off of what was just said, which is in this particular project, the difference between 20 and 25% is actually quite critical. Especially given the additional language that's provided about the timing of the certificate of occupancies. And in the lending environment that's out there right now, 20% is kind of an established threshold. Going above that makes the financing of the entire project such that we will most likely have to do two separate types of financings. That in and of itself is not an obstacle. It's the timing of the certificate of occupancies that basically will get us in a situation where one building will have to go before the other. So essentially, the residential building can't go forward unless the mixed-use building where there's commercial space or the non-residential spaces. So there's kind of two options that we could try to work with, which is do we get rid of the timing mechanism, which I don't think anyone has any interest in, which would basically mean you could build all the residential building and there would be no mechanism for enforcement of making sure that the non-residential building ever got built on a timely fashion, or we could possibly put some timeline. Or there's the ability to reduce the percentage of non-residential space down to 20%, which is consistent with many of the HUD and Fannie Mae and other underwriting guidelines, and keep the timing mechanism because we could still finance the project in its entirety. And I think it's important to note that there's some prior approved projects that have non-residential percentages in the upper 20s, 30s, even 40s that have failed to move forward, not only because of the commercial percentage, but I think it has a lot to do with that. So if we're going to have this particular ordinance to facilitate this commercial development with the additional density, the 25% will basically, in my opinion, establishing a threshold that will make it difficult for projects to go forward. So we'll have a new tool in the toolbox that no one picks up and uses. And I think it's important that when you look at this project, which I know we're kind of moving into the second discussion, in relation to the 500 North Greensboro project, that 5% going from 20 to 25% means, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 5,000 square feet. So it really becomes, and unfortunately, that's where the financial realities, are at this point. But we're still talking about delivering, somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 30,000 square feet of non-residential space. It just comes down to what is that square footage in relation to the entire project. So hopefully that was helpful, but it really be that 20% is a very important number. That doesn't mean you can't do more, that we might come back with 21 or 22 or something like that. We don't know exactly what that number will be. But making 25 that first threshold will make it very difficult with the timing mechanism with the certificate of occupancies. Thank you.
Thanks, Ken.
So you're essentially asking, just before you go, you're essentially asking for either more flexibility on the 20% or 25% number, or else more flexibility on the question of whether both parts of the project have to happen at the same time.
Right. I think there's two options. I think my preference would be 20% and keeping the timing mechanism in there so you know that the commercial slash non-residential space would be built, and that could be built as one project. I mean, there's some just physical constraints of trying to do two separate constructions on that site as two separate projects, but that's not neither here nor there right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. All right.
Ken, before you go, the option of in the residential building, making residential spaces that could be retrofitted in the future, could you, is that an option?
There is the potential to put some limited non-residential space in the back building. If there was a need for some live-work units and things like that. So we would be willing to keep that potential open. But just to be clear, we think the most viable part of the non-residential is that front building in the first two stories. Mm-hmm. That's adjacent to the North Greensboro frontage.
Right. So just to restate, to make up for that, if we were to keep the 25%, in theory, a third way might be to have 5% of the residential building be a hybrid that could be converted into commercial. You could build it residential, but if the market were right, if a tenant wanted, they could convert into commercial.
They could, but the issue with that would be is the timing mechanism that's in the certificate of occupancy would still be a difficulty for getting financing. Right. So you'd have to basically trust that the front building would get built. Otherwise, you're going to get... If you have two separate lenders, the one lender's looking at the other one saying, well, I'm not going to give you money until I know you do your building, and the other lender's going to say the same thing to the other one, and you're at an impasse.
Okay. Thanks, Ken. Yes. All right. Board members, do you have comments, discussion?
I'm just going to quickly reiterate what I said when this first came before us. Our community 10 years ago went through a lot to get to the point where our downtown zoning is now. That was based on the promise that 40% commercial would decrease our residential taxes. That was really what we were going after, and if we didn't approve that, we were causing global warming. Now, to see it being pulled back, if we pass this, we are going to see all of the projects which have been approved and are now waiting to be financed. We're going to see all of them come in and want this. And what we are going to end up with is a series of very dense apartments in downtown Carrboro with not enough parking, It was hard enough to agree to the five stories. I think one of the reasons why we're not seeing things built is that we artificially inflated the value of the property downtown by making it five stories. You may be able to build five stories on it, but the banks aren't going to finance five stories on it. I think if we were still at three stories, we'd be seeing some more building going on. But that's, and I've heard that from bankers and finance people. But if we pass this, everybody who has a permit right now for a project downtown is going to come in and ask for this. They're going to say, look, I can't build with 40% commercial. The recession's killing me. I want to have my commercial decreased to 25, although now I'm hearing that it should probably be 10. And we are going to end up, years and years ago, before I was even on the board, Carborough went and looking at student housing and apartments. That was when the town began to encourage the building of apartment buildings on the perimeter. That's a great place for them to be. I think to have downtown just intense apartments, which is what this will be, no matter how you sugarcoat it. That's not where I want to live, and that's not where, you know, and I happen to live downtown, and that's not where other people I know who live downtown want. So I do not want to pass this. I think it would be opening a Pandora's box, and we would end up within 10 years, downtown Carborough will be coffee shops and dense student housing. I know I'm not a wonk. I know I don't have the wonk policy details that some other people do, but I have insights into this town, and I know how this town works, and I know the unintended consequences of policies. I've been around long enough to see this. This will cause downtown Carborough to look like our bypass.
Lydia.
Well, I disagree with Jackie. I think that this mechanism would give us another tool in our toolbox. I'm, you know, representative of, as we all are, lots and lots of citizens who are concerned about our tax rate, who are looking for ways to increase our commercial property, and also ways to have people come and spend their money in Carborough and increase our sales tax. I see this passing this mechanism as coming up with a way that we can then look at future possible developments and give and take with developers who come before us. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's carte blanche for any project that would come before us. It also addresses, you know, lots and lots of values this community supports. For example, all of the provisions, the Silver LEED certify, and a lot of the energy provisions. It works on our transportation corridor we're trying to set up. It makes use of pieces of property that might be appropriate for use like this. It brings a lot of people downtown. It provides workforce housing. So I think this gives us a lot of flexibility, and I would like to move this resolution, attachment A1, but I also would like to change this percentage of commercial to 20%. We started out at 15%, and then our last meeting it went to 20, and then suddenly went to 25. I think 20%, given the economic realities and the fact that this would bring a lot of more folks downtown to spend money, I think that that's entirely appropriate.
Randy, and then Tammy.
Well, you know, the process has been kind of confusing, and one of the things that I know is of concern is that the folks haven't been comfortable with the process. The planning board itself, you know, needs to be able to be more involved in this. I think that you know, we have worked very, very hard to try and build our local living economy, and this is a very tough time. And having folks who want to live downtown, who will walk and who will bike and who are immediately close to everything that's downtown, is very important. You know, so while I'm not happy about how the process has evolved, in fact, I'm concerned, I would like to see that, you know, we look at conditions so that we can, you know, ensure that this does not occur the way this has occurred again. While I also don't like the precedent that this may set, you know, I'm very much, I'm very much interested in the fact that there are local business people who want to invest locally that are willing to push to 20%, that have an idea in mind that will have people who live right downtown and be able to expand business downtown. We've been approached by many business folks who cannot find space to put their businesses. They've gone to Hillsborough. They've gone to Durham. They've gone to Burlington. I feel that if there's local people who want to invest locally and want to help not only wed commercial with putting people downtown on a piece of property, citing that is very tough to make a sale with, because we've looked at this property in several different ways over the last several years. I agree with Lydia. I will second your motion.
Sammy.
You know, this is very tricky. We do want higher density downtown. We want residential. And I think that this change to the map and the request to bring it down from 25 to 20% is very much driven by the nature of the properties in question. They're very deep, and the applicant makes the good point that it's really hard to have commercial space in the back building. Mm-hmm. This is a very significant property because there are potentially the Fitch property next to it is another very deep property. And this is also property that's in the middle of downtown, and you can't bring property from outside of, you know, it's just where it is. And so I'm very reluctant to reduce the 25%, and because I feel like we're trying to fit the project to the map amendment, not the other way around. And other developers will have to do it the other way around, whatever it ends up being. I think one way to get around that and make this more attractive to lenders and more viable to have commercial, what is currently far deep in the back of these lots, is to have a parallel road to Greensboro, which is necessary anyway, because Greensboro is already super busy and can't hold so much traffic. It's something that we're going to have to deal with anyway as we try to encourage mixed use in downtown. We can't put so much mixed use. And I guess that's one question I have for the DOT. Are they going to require that we expand the road once it's just a big roadblock forever? So for me, it's like I want to encourage this, but also think that we can be creative, and we have to create the pressures for making this more commercially viable. In other words, if the constraint is 25%, then the owners of the property will consider the need for a road to make the commercial properties that are currently just in the back, far back, more viable as commercial properties. I wanna very much encourage this, but I also am reluctant to have too much residential where commercial would be most appropriate, and that is downtown. And I want there to be more mixed use. And I hear what Lydia's saying, and this is the conundrum. We want to encourage more development that's very close to services. It's a very cheap way to generate tax revenue. We don't have to build the infrastructure like is being proposed in other parts of this county to achieve, tax revenue. So I want to hear the rest of the board before I say I'm for or against this.
Yeah, I need to ask you a follow-up question, because I don't understand, where would you propose to put a parallel road?
Well, you see there's already a gap right there.
In the middle of the
lot.
That's what you're saying.
A parallel road to the east, closer to Chapel Hill.
Right, and then that would make that back building be road front, too.
Okay.
And then lenders would want to lend, because one of the arguments is they don't want to lend to a property that's
landlocked. Okay. Uh-huh. I think I understand now.
Uh-huh. Interesting thought. Dan or Joel, do you want to add anything?
I think Dan, go.
He looks like he was ready to let you go.
That's too bad.
No, I'll let you go.
No, I'll let Dan go.
Okay.
Now I'm all annoyed.
Yeah, I'm not going to support this. I have never been comfortable with this proposal. I told Ken that months ago. I told David Bellin that. I told David Jesse that in long conversations. I don't get the connection of all these improvements to density in this very limited sense. I think if we want incentives for what are they called? Vibrant, successful community features, they should be available townwide in all of our zones. And I think if we want more density on North Greensboro Street, which we may, I'm not ruling that out. I don't know if we want this much as the next item is, but we may want more. But I think that's its own discussion that the community should have about what is our vision for that. As Jackie pointed out, we had substantial visioning for downtown a decade ago. We had community discussions for the Northern Study Area a couple of years ago. We've not had that for here. I don't like this linkage. I'm glad we had the time over the summer and since the September meeting, as I was really trying to see if there was a way I could be comfortable with this, but I'm not, so I will not be voting for this. I don't want this tool in my toolbox. I think it's a clumsy tool that the application of it raises as many issues as it solves, and I would like to see more precise tools that are geared toward discrete and specific ends if we choose to pursue them.
This leaves you and me, John.
Interesting. I could follow protocol and let you go live. And I might do that today. I'm feeling kind. I've listened to all the arguments about this and the discussion surrounding this particular piece of property. I know some members of the board would say this is a great place to put a public library, although we know the county ain't going to spend for $600,000. And we certainly don't have any money, as we see by our CIP, nor our financial statement for at least this year, to pony up the extra whatever it would cost to get them to buy it. That's one thing. And the second thing is, having been one of the major proponents of doubling the commercial space in downtown and getting such a hard time about it when I ran for re-election, it's kind of ironic in a way. This is a difficult question because the question is, do we want to respond to the existing market forces or do we want to wait? Really, that is the issue. That's one of the issues. The other issue is, will future boards take enough time? And what was suggested almost 8 to 10 years ago, and be very specific about what they want and what they don't want at particular pieces of property. We've had that discussion. We've said we wanted more density downtown, and the question is, do you have enough faith that future boards will make the right and correct decision? Because this is an issue that's not going to go away. For me, I'm inclined, because I've always been that way, to see what the tool will allow. Because ultimately, the board is the final decision maker. For whatever applicant that comes, we are not, and boards are not bound by changing the zoning and then decide this is not the appropriate place for our development. So, that's all I have to say.
Yeah, you're right. I think, you know, you put the question well that, you know, how interested in, are we in changing some of our ordinances in order to be more accommodating toward what really kind of gets down to what the banking system in the United States requires. I'll just go ahead and blame Wells Fargo right now.
It used to be Wacko.
Which used to be first. Yep. But in seriousness, that is a significant part of what it gets down to. At least on the issue of the points that Mr. Ryder was making about 20% versus 25% and the timing issues involved. You know, it's a I tend to think that this it's true that this land use ordinance text amendment would open up a considerable number of future possibilities, but if I can address a point that Joel was just making a minute ago in a more specific way, there's a difference between there's a major and important difference to understand between when a developer comes to us and asks for a property to be rezoned versus when the developer comes and says, I want to build this building and I need a conditional use permit from you, but I don't need a rezoning because the zoning district is already there. When the zoning district is already there, when the development already matches the zoning district, the board has a more limited and judicially reviewed role to play. We're not there to sort of say, well, you know, what exactly do we think would be best for our community? We're actually there to apply our town ordinances in the way that a judge applies the laws of the state of North Carolina in a civil trial or even a criminal trial. The reason I'm making this point is that this text amendment change would allow for for a variety of new possibilities, but all of those possibilities would be in situations where the developer is coming to ask us to apply this zoning district to a particular piece of property. And what I'm getting at is the Board of Aldermen will always have very broad authority to turn that down, to say no. That's not something that the developer can then say, oh, it's unfair, and I'm going to appeal, and I'm going to sue you, and I'm going to go to court and force this rezoning to happen. Rezonings don't work that way. Sometimes permit applications end up in that situation, but rezonings don't. The discretion is largely, I mean, the board has to be, you know, can't act arbitrarily, but the board does have a lot of discretion in whether to grant a rezoning or not. Now, what that really means, though, is that if we pass this text amendment, then future boards, not necessarily the same people who are sitting here now, well, presumably Jackie, but not necessarily anybody else, will get the opportunity to vote on whether they want to apply that this zoning district, this B1G CZ zoning district, to a particular piece of property in the future. And so at some level, the question becomes whether, how much confidence we have in the people who will come after us to serve on this board. Confidence in their ability to make good planning decisions for our community about when and where to apply this type of zoning district. I think I'm comfortable with that notion. I think I'm comfortable with that notion, and I think it would be reasonable. We don't necessarily have to put the percentage at 20% and leave it there forever. We can keep an eye on that issue as financing situations change and as our economy locally and globally changes. But I think it would be reasonable to move down from 25% to 20% in order to try and be more accommodating. Sammy, I wanted to get specifically to the issue that you raised. It's an interesting thought about the notion of a parallel street further to the east. And I guess that's an issue that'll be more for discussion in our next public hearing, if we're having our next public hearing. Let me just point out right now that the construction of a new street is very expensive, as we're currently experiencing on Weaver Street right now. It is very expensive to build streets to the standards that our ordinances require, and it would cause me some concern, that notion that we might require another street to be built, about whether that's really about how realistic that is, because effectively what it would mean is that regardless exactly of this proposal of Mr. Ryder's that's kind of hanging out there in the wings, waiting in the wings right now, it would mean for this property, whoever develops it, and for the Fitch property, whoever one day develops that there's be a very significant additional financial burden on trying to do that, which to my way of thinking could be quite an impediment against the possibility of a more downtown type of use of those properties. But
can I respond to that?
Yeah.
The last thing I want to do is actually build another road, as y'all can probably imagine.
I knew that about you.
But it would be great to be able to think of road front property to be road front in the sense of bike front. In other words, if we had a bike path, this property has the advantage of having the slope, and I understand the intention of the developer in maximizing the use of that slope to put parking under the building. I think that's a great use of it, but on the other hand, it's a lost opportunity to have those kind of bike side commercial storefronts on that side too. And I think that there's an opportunity there to maintain high density, but it would be at the cost of parking. So that's
another. And I think that's an interesting topic to explore. It'll be more relevant maybe to the next hearing or even,
but it relates whether 25 or 20%.
Yeah, and I guess this is the case I would make, is that it doesn't seem to me that the 20 versus 25% commercial component is really the that's sort of only kind of tangentially related, is I guess my point. It's only tangentially related to the question of road access or bikeway access or whatever through there. That's not, I mean, in other words, I think there could be a mechanism to ensure to address some of what your objectives are, but that focusing on the 20 versus 25% is probably not the most direct way to get to that issue, it seems to me.
Right, and the reason why I think it's relevant is because, again, it's because this residential building's off the road that the lenders wouldn't provide funding for commercial in that space. And so it's the challenge of
having them see. I mean, it's a huge challenge that they probably wouldn't see anyway to
But they're not going to be any more excited about lending an additional $1 million to build a road through there. Is sort of the
right,
or whatever
or a
it
bike
call.
Path because yeah. they probably don't see that as storefront.
They not yet. Yeah. You know, not yet.
Is the motion on the floor for the resolution of consistency? Is that correct? Or?
I thought it was for attachment
A1,
right?
I would just like to add to this discussion that if you pass this, then we are going to get everybody who already has applications, everybody that already has permits, is going to come and ask to have theirs revised. And I'm sitting here thinking, I don't think we can come up with good reasons for not doing that. And they're going to say, we played by the rules that you wrote 10 years ago when the community came up with a charrette. We came in, played by those rules. These folks are going to have a different set of rules. We all want to now go by the new rules. And you're going to decrease the amount of commercial from 40 to 20%. And there's not going to be any reason to not allow this for existing properties. And they're going to say, it's really unfair if you don't.
And let me pose it this. I've been on the board 12 years. And I have seen residential developers say to us with a straight face, we cannot build X because the market is not selling X. Mm-hmm. And we have allowed them not to build X because they couldn't sell X. I can give a specific example of what we did recently in the last 6 months.
Yeah, like the Claremont.
Well, you said it, I didn't.
Yep.
So I guess for me, the difficulty I'm having is what's the difference between Claremont and what's the difference here? There are some other issues. This is just the issue of the tool to change the zoning amendment. Because keep in mind, I'm of the belief just because I approve the zoning change doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to improve the project. That's two different things for me. I have split them for whatever reason separately out of my head.
Everybody's going to want that new tool because the new tool is more profitable than the old tool. They're all going to want it. I've heard from people, oh, yeah, you know, and it would be really unfair if we don't then give it to every property that has a permit. Promise you.
Well,
if you don't mind, I'm sorry.
Sure. All right, hang on.
But on the other hand, you know, and I mean, you're painting a sort of extreme picture of how this could turn out. But I'm looking around at all the things that we have approved and that don't work financially, and saying, well, but wouldn't we like to have some semblance of some of that happen? I'm not asking you to say that you love everything that we've ever approved in the past that hasn't been built, but I'm saying, you know, we do need some growth in our tax base, and you know, this will, I believe this will allow us to get some growth in our commercial tax base.
If it was three stories, they'd be building now. That we have zoned out the marketability of the property downtown. People do not want to build high-end office space in Carrbrook. That's not our niche.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's the most productive, high-profit, and I guess commercial because it's rental thing to build is apartment buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're going to get. I've said it 10 times. There's no sense saying it again.
I would just point out to you, and I'm not trying to have an argument with you, Jackie. I'm seriously trying to have a discussion. But it seems to me that some places in our downtown are going to be more appropriate for that kind of thing than others.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're not granting carte blanche for this to be applied all over the place. That's going to be a decision that on a case-by-case basis, whatever Board of Aldermen is there at the time will have to make.
Mr. Perry, could I just, technically speaking, if you're going to change it from 25 to 20%, then you probably need to change the next sentence in that subsection G to a ratio of 4-1 rather than 3-1, because the 3-1 is based upon 25%,
uh-huh,
and 4-1 would be based upon 20%.
Right.
So it's just a corresponding change.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. I'll assume that's a part of the motion in a second.
I don't think we've had a motion for the ordinance yet.
Yeah, and Dan's more procedural about this than I am, because I know I need to pass the resolution of consistency first, and I just want to make sure I have I'm correct here with which one I'm.
Yeah, A1 is correct.
So I'm moving A1, but it references the ordinance and. The ordinance is referencing is the one with the two changes that we just discussed.
20% and 4-1. Okay.
Correct.
So there's been a motion for the resolution of consistency. For those of you in the audience or who don't follow Board of Aldermen meetings too closely, this is a sort of a procedural pre-step before considering the ordinance that we're now required by the state legislature to consider.
This is the one that says 20%.
This is a resolution of consistency. In other words, a resolution that's going to say that that ordinance that Lydia was just talking about, 20%, 4-1 ratio, is consistent with our plans, adopted plans for the growth of our community. All right. So that has been moved and seconded.
Yeah.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. All those opposed?
No.
No. All right.
And then I move the ordinance itself.
Okay. So now this motion will actually modify the land use ordinance text amendment or land use ordinance in order to make these modifications to B1GCZ. It's been moved and seconded. By Randy.
Yes.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. All those opposed?
No.
No.
Okay. The matter passed unanimously. Passes 4-3. Far from unanimously. The matter passes barely, is what I meant to say. all right. I think that brings us to what in some ways is a more interesting part of this agenda. Item 6, a continued public hearing on a land use ordinance map amendment related to four properties at and near 500 North Greensboro Street. So now we're going to come to the part where we're talking about whether we want to apply this tool to this particular property. We'll have a presentation from our staff. We'll hear from Mr. Ryder, and then I'm going to call on the 12 of you who have signed up to speak.
You know, I think we're looking at 10:30. Given what you just said in our discussion, do we want to take a break before we start on this? Or
maybe we can take a break before we hear from the public. Like
sure.
Get started.
Sure.
All right, we'll hear the presentations from the staff and Mr. Ryder. Go ahead.
Indeed. Okay. So this is a continuation of hearings that were a hearing that was opened on June 14th as well, and then continued to September 27th. The property owners of the four lots are the petitioners for the rezoning in front of the board this evening, and the properties total about 2.5 acres of land. They're located on the east side of North Greensboro Street near the Sheldon Street intersection. And the request is, as the mayor noted about 15 or 20 minutes ago, maybe longer, that the B1G conditional zoning district be applied to these four lots, subject to mutually agreed upon conditions. And this project is seeking to utilize the provisions of the amendment, the text amendment that was just adopted, in allowing additional residential density than would otherwise be allowed in the base zoning district, the B1G zoning district. The type of action in front of the board is as the previous action, a legislative zoning decision, and there was discussion of this most recently on September 27th, and with a request to make revisions to the draft ordinance and provide other information as well. The properties are located here. They're outlined in the dark black line, four lots, 2.5 acres. There are structures only on the 404 North Greensboro Street parcel at this time. This structure was removed during the summer, was relocated. This is an aerial view of the property as well, looking from sort of the east across the property. This is North Greensboro Street, and here's Shelton Street. The application materials that were submitted initially to the town consisted of a rezoning petition, concept plan, a list of proposed conditions, an application fee, mailed notice materials, envelopes. There was notice of the public hearing, communication with property owners and residents within 1,000 feet of this, as well as posting the property itself and advertisements in the newspaper. The petitioners did decide to go through a voluntary courtesy concept plan review with the advisory boards and also conducted a neighborhood mailing and held a neighborhood meeting on the project. The concept for this proposed project is two buildings on the property, associated surface parking, below building parking and infrastructure, your sidewalks, changes to North Greensboro Street as a result of DO comments from the North Carolina Department of Transportation. The two buildings are summarized here on this slide. A three-story building at the front with two stories in the portion of the building that falls within the downtown neighborhood protection overlay zone buffer area. There are two floors of non-residential and one floor of residential units in that first building. And then the second building is a four-story building containing approximately 40 residential units. The concept plan references that the site would be developed with up to 114 residential units. Parking is shown below approximately one-half of the building at the rear of the project. This is that concept plan in a little bit closer detail. So building A up here, the improvements to North Greensboro Street, which include turn lanes coming from the north and from the south, relocation of the sidewalk and bike lanes, widening of the road essentially to accommodate the turn lanes.
Trish, that's a really important point. I want to make sure people understand that. And there it's a little difficult to see. When you say widening of the road there, how much do you mean widening of the road there?
Do you have a close-up on that? Or?
I do not.
Do you have some? Because that's huge. And how close would that be to the existing houses, which are historic mill houses?
The additional improvements in the roadway include this turn lane, which is about 11 feet wide. That's about 10 feet wide, excuse me. And so the current cross-section of this road is about 34 feet from the curb to curb.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have in that location bike lanes and two travel lanes currently. So this would be the addition, so increasing that by about 10 feet.
Okay. I think people need to be really aware of that, and that's kind of hard to see. So
it would be
increasing it by 10 feet.
The pavement width.
The pavement width, but then you also have the right of way.
Yes.
And right now the pavement is not 10 feet from the front porches of those houses, or it's barely. So could you please talk about the implications there?
The right of way in this location is about 60 feet wide as far as we know. The town did install a sidewalk along the west side of North Greensboro Street in a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago. When the sidewalk was installed on the west side, the sidewalk on the east side had been there for many years, associated with improvements from an earlier project that the Department of Transportation had done with the town. So the sidewalk was installed. There are currently power poles behind the sidewalk. Our understanding is that the right-of-way is fairly close to the area behind the sidewalk on the west side. Dan Jewell is here. He's the designer working with Mr. Ryder and the petitioners for the rezoning and has been involved in a more detailed drawing associated with this. What I'm showing you on this slide is the information they've submitted. And DOT has requested, I'm sorry, I know this is a long answer, and I'm trying
really
to capture
like
all
a
of the
really
points.
Direct answer.
I know.
About its in, really.
Well, I would
about
like
its s- impact on those structures on the other side of the
okay.
street.
Well, at this moment, I don't know what those that will be. We do know that the existing power poles are fairly close. It does not appear that there's enough room for the poles to be moved closer to the buildings. Primarily the buildings right here to the south, on the southwest corner. I'm sorry, the southwest corner of Greensboro.
Uh-huh.
The buildings in that particular block are fairly close to the sidewalk. There's a 15-foot requirement, separation requirement for the aerial lines there, the overhead aerial lines from Duke Power. And it doesn't look like those poles can be moved much closer. It does appear, based on the drawing and the information submitted from Mr. Ryder and others, that the right-of-way is a little bit wider there. So that is to say, the sidewalk may be closer than the power poles are. I can't speak to the exact particulars. I can say that there is a 60-foot right-of-way out there,
yes.
And that we understand that the power poles are pretty close to the edge of it. There may be a few feet behind it, but not much.
The right-of-way and the turn lane, and that people live in those houses, and
yes.
their historic houses, I think we really need to not lose sight of that
yeah.
as we go through this.
I agree.
Thank you.
And I would just one final point is that the proposed improvements currently measure about 56 feet within that 60-foot right-of-way. That is the actual improvements, the width of the curb and gutter, the width of the sidewalk, the width of the travel lanes, turn lanes, bike lanes.
But just to clarify, we meaning you, don't know exactly where the right-of-way is in terms of where the western boundary and where the eastern
no.
boundary.
No, right. We do not
where
have a survey.
The road improvements are taking place.
Okay. We do not have a survey that indicates exactly where the edges of it are.
And you're saying it's going to be 56. Do we know what the current footprint width is?
How much is
currently?
What is that number now?
It's 34 plus. I think the sidewalk is 5 feet on the western side.
So
that's 39. It's another. Is it a 4-foot sidewalk on the east side, George?
Yeah.
4 feet on the east side. So
is there any? Is there a strip of green in between?
There's a planting strip, mm-hmm. a little bit of grass on the east side. Yes.
So. On the east,
yeah,
on
18
one side.
Inches, yeah, uh-huh. about 18 inches of grass. Before, so it's about 5.5 feet to the back of the sidewalk on the east side.
And five on the
west side. There is no planting strip. It's
so that adds up to something like 44.
48.
How much?
45.
It should be 45. About 45.
45.
Feet.
45. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, this is a composite photograph of the location along the block along North Greensboro Street that we're looking at. This is the existing house that you see when you come out of Shelton Street, and this is the house that was that used to be to its north, but has been relocated. And then the building, the dwellings to the south and to the north. The board requested a variety of information at the September 27th meeting. That information was provided in your packets, and I can answer questions about that, but I wasn't going to make any comments about it in the presentation. There were five of the requests dealt with modifications to the draft ordinance and conditions in the draft ordinance that would make the map amendment. And there is one change to the information that was submitted to you, which is there are actually four conditional rezonings that have been approved since 2008. And I apologize for having forgotten the library rezoning that took place earlier this year, which also was a conditional zoning action by the Board of Aldermen. So they range from the 102 Center Street rezoning, which was the first property to be rezoned shortly after the evening that the amendment creating the B1G conditional zoning district, it was actually B2 at that time, was adopted, and then 401 North Greensboro Street followed later that year, the 500 North Greensboro Street rezoning, which took place last year in April of 2010, and then the library rezoning in April of this year. And this map just shows the location of those conditional zoning districts. The 210 Hillsborough Road, 102 Center Street, 401 North Greensboro Street, and 500 North Greensboro Street. Just an update on the conditions. So there are 12 included in the draft ordinance before you this evening. The location map and concept plan are referenced either directly or as an exhibit specifically or in reference to a condition. And the petitioner has indicated that the petitioners have indicated they're in agreement with all of the conditions in the draft ordinance. With regard to the provision in the text amendment that you just adopted previously, and the inclusion of a certain number of site and building element areas, the highlighted cells in this table show which of the conditions have been, or which of the site and building element areas have been addressed with the conditions that are included in the draft ordinance. So there's a condition related to stormwater management, a couple related to energy conservation, energy production, alternative transportation, and affordable housing. This is a context map that just shows within a quarter mile radius of the property the footprints of buildings. So within about a 5-minute walk from this site, what type of development is nearby. I'm just going to shift to some other images just to kind of walk through what the CT zoning district looks like. Just a reminder, the CT is the gray shaded areas all around the site that's currently zoned B1GCZ at 500 North Greensboro Street, and with the aerial photograph, what that looks like. So again, here's the lot at 500 North Greensboro Street, and here is the Fitch property, which is zoned M1. This is looking at the site from the railroad tracks, so looking to the northwest, from the railroad tracks looking to the site, and then looking back to the south at Carmel. And this is pretty much looking directly to the west into the site at the juncture of the property boundary with where the Parker Street right-of-way would extend out to the railroad right-of-way and adjoining the Southern States property. This is turning around and looking towards the east and development in the CT zoning district along Lloyd Street. And then another view of a couple of projects that have been developed in the CT zoning district. Moving up to the edge of the B1G and the CT zoning district on Lloyd Street, looking north, and then walking down the street at what that area looks like. Down to the Piedmont Health property, which is at the bottom or the north end of the CT zoning district. showing just some various images of the edges of the street, sidewalk, so forth, and then looking back to the south. Okay, now we're over on North Greensboro Street, and this is Parker Street, the Parker Street intersection with North Greensboro. And a broader view looking to the north, and then looking pretty much from the Shelton Street intersection across to the east, directly across to the east. This is looking from the northwest down to the southeast. Some views again to the looking from the northwest to the southeast.
There are no cars on those streets.
Just some views, context views of the structures and development around the site.
Right. And so,
there you go. Where's the car?
So the staff did prepare an illustration. This is based on the form and size of the information that was provided by the petitioners in their. Oops, I apologize. But that would cleanly go back to that spot. The form and size of the front building on the property. This is the existing house to the north. And this is looking across from the Shelton Street intersection. The staff analysis is, has been summarized for the board before. Some limitations have been identified associated with the project. The requested rezoning, and these relate to three areas, principally the projected level of service at the drive entrance, the mix of uses, although this has been largely alleviated due to the increase in non-residential from the original proposal, the project scale and placement in relation to the character of nearby development, and particularly in relation to some language in the land use ordinance that speaks to harmony of with the community and with nearby development of new buildings in the downtown area. The staff notes that the technical formal approval of a rezoning for this project cannot occur at present. There will need to be a conditional use permit submitted and reviewed and approved before the development could actually move forward. But due to the level of detail that's been provided, the type of information that has been considered, approval of the map amendment would effectively practically approve the concept plan for this development. And so some of the elements, particularly with regard to the downtown architectural standards and the question of harmony with the community and nearby development, would likely not be open for review when this project would come back for a conditional use permit if the rezoning were approved.
Say that again. I want to make sure I understand you.
The amount of information that you'll have seen and the elements of the concept plan showing the number of parking spaces, the amount of the placement of the buildings, the amount of the number of units, et cetera, do set up an expectation, an effective approval of the project's concept. And so the language, specifically the language in 15178 regarding downtown architectural standards, and you may recall at the first public hearing, I offered some comments, and perhaps there was some conversation about the fact that the Board of Aldermen would need to make a finding with regard to the downtown architectural standards. And there are some specific elements in the downtown architectural standards, for example, about screening parking from existing roadways. And in this concept plan, the parking is actually seen visible from the roadway. There's also there's also the amount of course, there's glazing and other provisions in the downtown architectural standard. So we had some, the need to actually specifically defer the decision on that was identified as something that would take place. I mean, it was something you all would have to do. That is to say, you couldn't pre-approve its compliance with downtown architectural standards, not having seen an application. Okay. However, this particular language and just is about the purpose and intent of the downtown architectural standards, and there is specific language there that even under the alternative review process for downtown architectural standards, it's the language that the permit issuing authority looks back to decide whether a project is in keeping with the reason we have downtown architectural standards to begin with. So it just raises a it's really just a piece of information that we felt was important to point out to you that while it's not, you know, it's not, you cannot approve this, I mean, you cannot pre-approve a permit for this project. The concept plan is so detailed that you you are effectively approving the intensity of the project, the location of the buildings, et cetera.
So
unless they were to, you know, the applicant was to propose and request modifications to that, and then there may be some room to discuss that.
So we're approving effectively whatever screening is drawn currently in their diagrams or whatever.
No, not screening. Okay. I'm really speaking to the screening. I mean, there are a number of ordinance requirements that have to be met.
But architectural features, even though we haven't seen details on the building.
Let me try and take a stab at that. I mean, the specific language that you've got that you will, when it gets to the CUP stage, be asked to address, is the language in the ordinance in 15178 that says new architectural design is harmonious and complementary with existing buildings in the community as a whole. It would be inconsistent since you have before you a concept plan that shows a three-story building at a particular location as illustrated by that diagram you've just seen. While you haven't seen the specific architectural features and the fenestration and all that good architectural terminology that I don't know much about, but it would certainly be inconsistent to approve what is before you and then conclude that a three-story building located in exactly where it's shown to you this evening to be located was not harmonious and complementary with existing buildings in the community as a whole. Is that
But it would still have to go through the downtown architectural standards in terms of the design.
If we pass this tonight, yes, we're passing the project.
Well,
that aspect,
it's a little bit of an overstatement, but you would certainly with respect to the issue of whether a three-story building at that location is harmonious and complementary with existing buildings in the community as a whole, you couldn't both approve a building that is shown to you to be this evening as part of the concept plan. They're showing you a building that's going to be at the location where you have seen it, and it's a three-story building at that location with, or is it four stories? I'm sorry, Trish. Is it a three-story building?
In the front.
The front building is a three-story building that's where it is, and it's three stories. So it would be inconsistent to come back later and say, having approved the rezoning showing you a three-story building at that location, we now conclude that it is not harmonious with the surrounding neighborhood to approve a three-story building at that location. That's, I think, what we're saying.
And just, I mean, Mr. Ryder is here, as he's already spoken, and he has a presentation and with rendering of the building's appearance.
I to follow up with Mike.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to...
Because the slide here says support for the project in its entirety. Does in its entirety in that context mean every detail that would normally be subject to consideration at the time of the CUP?
No, that
it
just
doesn't.
Means that...
So there are some details.
Well, yes, there are some details, certainly. But, again, you have you have now seen a proposal for road improvements that are part of this application showing you a turn lane. And so you... if they come back and show you a turn lane, you couldn't turn the project down on the basis that they're showing you a turn lane and the road is too wide because you already approved what they've submitted that shows you that. Now,
if we discover when we find out what the right-of-way is that we don't like where that right-of-way falls,
it would be too
late then.
Yes. Basically, you're approving what you have been shown in detail. If it's something that hasn't been shown to you, you can't have approved it. But you can't both approve it now and then disapprove it at the CUP stage. I guess that's the bottom.
Even though we haven't seen it completely. In other words,
well, but he's saying the parts that we do see in some detail, if the rezoning is approved tonight, you can't then turn around and disapprove the final application. Based on those same...
So can we unsee what we just...
You couldn't go back and say the road's too wide.
You can't unapprove.
You're not open
meeting. But hold on. Let me ask one other kind of procedural question here, though. But one of the possibilities is also that we may see some parts of this that we're not, you know, that we may not be prepared to go along with, and that...
the final decision on the rezoning may not be made tonight. I mean, this matter could be, for example, you know, sent back to the developer to say, you know, there's still some details you're showing us here that don't work for our community, and it may still need further tweaking. Is that true?
Of course.
Yeah. So, I mean,
the bottom line is we don't have to approve
the
map amendment. Correct.
No.
Okay.
But if you approve a project showing 90 units, which I think this is showing on the concept plan, you can't come back. You can't turn it down subsequently because there's too many units. In other words, if you're approving it, you can't unapprove at the CUP stage something which you specifically approved at this stage.
And beyond that, it could be 140 units. 114.
I'm sorry. It says 100. I think I said 100, up to 114. May I just make one point, which is the building is essentially a three-story building, but the front portion of it, 10 feet, which would be within, as it was originally drawn, and I think still, within the DNP buffer area, DNP overlay zone buffer area, is a two-story portion. So this section of the building, which we've not as elegantly represented as Mr. Ryder's rendering, but and elevation drawings, but it is two stories at the very front and then three stories behind. I just want to make sure that was clear to everybody who was in the audience.
Okay.
So the action options in front of the board are to find that the limitations as presently designed do not advance the public interest and either request additional information, time, choose to deny the requested rezoning, propose a different rezoning strategy perhaps, find otherwise, and act in favor of the requested rezoning. And then, as a reminder, action on a consistency resolution is needed whether the board chooses either of those approaches, that is to say, approving or denying. I'm happy to try and answer any questions.
Thanks a lot. Okay.
So we'll take a break, and then
we'll take a we're going to take a 5-minute recess, and then we'll hear from Ken Ryder. All right, ladies and gentlemen, please have a seat. The hour is starting to get late, and we have a lot of people to hear from. I would like to start with Ken Ryder, and then we are going to proceed to go through the people who are signed up on the list here. Mr. Ryder, go ahead.
Thanks. The presentation was covering the text amendment, map amendment, so I'll quickly go through the first part and get to where we are in the agenda right now. But first, I want to make sure that I give to Kathy some letters of support for the project from business owners and other residents in the downtown area.
Can you speak into the microphone?
Sorry. I'm just giving to Kathy some letters of support from downtown business owners. So we're in the map amendment process, talking about the conditions. As you may recall, we went through a number of advisory board neighborhood meetings and cataloged all the different conditions and comments from staff, boards, and other input. We had a long matrix of conditions of about 36 items that we then condensed to about 34 that now have resulted in 12 conditions that were in the information that Trish presented, and I'll go through those. There was in the comments that Trish had, she indicated that all conditions were agreed to. There's a couple differences I want to point out that we just talked about with Mike Bro. But essentially, 1, 2, and 3 are essentially the same. They are the same. Number 4, this is related to Dan's comment about how do you address the potential desire or lack of desirability of having student housing. How do you control that? So we had talked about some type of constraint between the bedroom and bathroom configuration. Dan's recommendation was more actually would result in a lot of half bathrooms, which may or not be desirable when we're trying to keep some of the affordability levels. Being obligated to build half bathrooms maybe wasn't a good fit. So I think if we applied Dan's calculations to the entire project, we'd probably come up okay, and there wasn't detail. So this is the one that we had proposed, which was essentially we're not planning on doing any three bedrooms, but if we did, we wouldn't be able to do kind of a three-bedroom, three-bathroom suite. The unit mix for most of our units will be one-bedroom, one-bath, two-bedroom, one-bath, two-bedroom, two-baths. The difference here on number 5 is talking about what are those conditions that are important for creating this vibrant and successful downtown. We think an affordable housing requirement is important. Right now, the zoning ordinance talks about 15% of units at 80% of the area median income. We're agreeing to do 10% of the residential units at 60% of AMI, and then also having 80% of the units at 10% of the units at 80% of area median income. Number 6 is getting into what we call getting to the LEED Silver equivalent. So primarily, I'd say about 20 of the conditions and recommendations that came from the boards all kind of surrounded around energy efficiency, water conservation, stormwater management. So kind of the national guidance and one way of kind of capturing all of those things without having to pick a laundry list of specific things, which we may or may not know exactly today, was that achieving a LEED silver equivalent standard of design without having to go through the commissioning or certification process, similar to what was followed for the fire station number 2, is essentially what we're talking about. And then we listed a few items that we know today that we can commit to, which is the compact, efficient building envelope with glazing, finishes, insulations, roofing materials, trying to reduce the heat island effect using Energy Star appliances, high SEER HVAC equipment, solar hot water for the common areas of the buildings, and an on-site electric vehicle. So we've gone through and taken some of the components that were in the text amendment and pulling some of those out and saying there's some specific requirements. And then 7 is essentially providing a parking configuration so that there can be access to the property from the south boundary. This also gets into tying in some of the transportation improvements that we talked about. Just to clarify something, which is there is a 60-foot right-of-way that we have had surveyed, Dan Jewell with Coulter Jewell. We actually went out there and did that. So the proposed improvements on the cross-section that we're talking about are 56 feet. So, and this is kind of in working with DOT and staff, is that the maximum improvement, which would be sidewalks, 5-foot sidewalks, grass strip, bike lanes, and then 3 travel lanes, is about 56 feet. And the existing right-of-way is 60 feet today. So there is the ability to put those improvements in there. We're not saying they should be in there. We're just saying if it was a desire of DOT and the board that the maximum improvement be out there, that it could be fit in the existing right-of-way.
Tin, you just said 3 travel lanes, but I'm assuming you misspoke.
2 travel lanes and 1 turn lane. Sorry. So basically three lanes,
but only 2 travel lanes.
Yeah, and that's doing a 5-foot bike lane. So there is the ability to reduce the width of that improvement, whether it's eliminating the grass strips, trying to get a smaller bike lane. There's lots of things that can be done that can reduce it, but there is the ability to put the larger improvement in there if that's what's needed.
Do you have a drawing?
I do. It's further on. We talked about covered bike parking at 1 for every 4 residential units. The parking lot will follow a green, the EPA Green Parking Lot Resource Guide.
Do you recall what the TAB recommendation was about covered bike parking? It's on our packet this time.
It was 1 for every 2 units.
Okay.
It was 1 for every 2 units. So we're providing half of what they required. But and when you see the images, we'll show you where that's at. We talked about having this public bicycle and pedestrian trail at the back end of the property along the railroad track. So depending on where that location would ultimately want to be based on some of the studying and design work, there's the ability to put something back along the railroad tracks that could tie into greenways or possibly into Parker Street. Number 11 is, again, Dan, trying to address some of the issues with student housing, which is how do you ensure that the folks who are living there have an earned income. We won't be able to do 9-month leases. We have to do 12-month leases. So this is a way for us to establish procedures that we know whoever is coming there has the income, they live, they work. A lot of the feedback we got from the business owners that we spoke to, which is there is a need for many of their workers to have affordable places to work. This is the type of facility we think that will be attractive to those folks. It's not that we can't provide the housing to, grad students or researchers and things like that, but we think there's a real demand for this product. And then finally, talking with Trish and staff, we've agreed to kind of pull the building back even a little bit further off the right-of-way to address some of the context, character, and scale with relation to the adjacent properties. So I've got I tried to also match up items from the text amendment and the map amendment. How do these kind of link together? So when you look at the various conditions and the characteristics of what are this term vibrant and successful downtown, we've tried to match up as best we can. And this is not an exact science, but doing the LEED and the green components, theoretically help with water conservation and stormwater and energy conservation. We also tried to do some on-site energy production. So I talked to Sammy about trying to get some type of solar hot water we think we get that done for the common areas of the commercial building. It's a little bit more challenging to get it done for the entire residential buildings. There really isn't a good way of doing that yet. We're not quite sure about that. There's a lot of alternative transportation components that we're talking about, having a site access that lines up with Shelton so that traffic movements are a little bit better, and there's a bus terminal across the street, covered bike parking, the easement. Since I did this presentation earlier today, there's a little bit different, the text amendment changed, so It talked about having a minimum requirement for non-residential space, so that really doesn't apply to this. We'll have some type of public art, public amenities. Gets back to kind of this weighting. You know, is it really equal to have some component for public art but still meet a large percentage of affordable housing requirements? And then there's other things that relate to housing that tie into some of the other things. So we're trying to figure out how do the 12 conditions that we're agreeing to in a format match up with the text amendment, so that when you're looking at the entire document that they make sense, that you can say, okay, there is some relationship to the two items. This is just a context map which you've seen before. We think the scale and size and footprint of the building is consistent with the character that's in that area. The footprints are relatively large on the east side. They back up on other commercial areas on the railroad tracks. You've seen this site plan before. This is an elevation of the front building. So based on the condition that we have, this would be pulled back much further, probably another 15 feet or so. This is the elevation of the back building with the parking tucked underneath. I think what Sammy was talking about was potentially there would be a road that would go down. I couldn't see what you were pointing to, but or some type of trail bike easement would match up in that area. This is an elevation of what the project might look like from across the street. And then this is the cross-section of the transportation improvements. This is based on the survey that was done by Coulter Jewell. Again, what you have here is basically a 56-foot cross-section, 5-foot sidewalk, 3-foot grass strip, I think 18 inches of curb and gutter, a bike lane. Then there's a travel lane. There would be a turn lane right here, another travel lane, and kind of the same balance on the other side.
And are those, as it appears to be on the west side, are those people's front yards disappearing?
There will be impact on the sidewalks that are there, so they'll be closer, but they'll be in the existing public right away though. There are probably plantings, mailboxes, and other improvements that are in the public right away right now, which may need to be moved if the cross section is this one that we're proposing here. And this is based on feedback from NCDOT and staff that this is what could go there. We're not saying it should. This might be one of the items where we say, you know what, we're not sure about this. Let's rethink that. I mean, you take the grass strips out, and that's, you know, 3 feet on each side. That's 6 feet. It's a little bit uncomfortable. There's a precedent out there where there isn't grass strip.
And you realize this is where people live, and people have lived for many, many years. This is other people's properties and other people's livelihoods.
Of course, I do.
I thought it was in the right of way.
It is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is all within the 60-foot public right of way.
I mean, I understand it's butting up against those houses, but you're not taking people's land, right?
No.
Right.
Yes.
Only what they think of
as their. There's sometimes a significant difference between where your yard actually ends and where it seems to end. But anyway.
So I'm happy to.
You still got a mower.
But not.
So I think the important things is this is what the transportation improvements may look like. There were some changes to the conditions that Tricia proposed, primarily having to do with the affordable housing, where we're agreeing to 10% at 60% of AMI and 10% of the units at 80% of AMI, area median income, sorry. I'll take any questions you have.
I think we should, we'll probably have some more questions for you at some point. I think we should probably transition to hearing from members of the public who signed up to speak.
I'd like to come back and respond if I can.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have you back up in a little while. Gabe Riven. Is Gabe here? All right. Please come up.
Who did you call?
Gabe Riven.
Oh. So I have 3 minutes, right?
You do.
Okay. Do you have a little timer?
I do.
Awesome. Thank you. I thank the board for having me up here tonight to speak about this. This is obviously a very heated issue, as we can hear from the audience members. I am relatively new to Carrboro. I moved here in late June, and I moved here with a very specific intention of living in a town that felt comfortable, that felt like it had character, that felt like it had history. I was charmed the first time I walked up and down Greensboro Street and saw where I would eventually live, which was 506 North Greensboro in Cedar Court. I moved from Washington, D.C., where mixed-use development is the hot thing. Of course, there are tons of empty commercial spaces all along the main drag that I lived on. But it felt like a highway where I lived. It didn't feel humane. It didn't feel like Carrboro feels, which is like a community with history, with life to it. And so when I first heard about the Shelton Station project, I grew really upset because, like I said, I moved here because I wanted to feel like I wasn't just part of a highway. Now, we're seeing these transportation improvements or whatever other euphemisms we need to use to describe the fact that these roads are going to get really big. I already almost get hit when I walk across the street by people who don't feel like they need to respect the right-of-way of the pedestrian. So I've learned that even though there's that little yellow sign up at Shelton Street, I still look both ways. I still wait until someone will gracefully stop for me. My girlfriend, who's sitting in the back, will attest in a moment about how she almost gets hit on her bike when she rides in the bike lane. No matter how we design these roads with protections for pedestrians and bicyclists, the more cars we put on it, the more dangerous it's going to feel to us. You know, we can bring forth statistics about how many pedestrian deaths or bicyclist deaths we have, but there's really a sense of perception that the board needs to take into consideration, how we feel about this neighborhood that we live in. I'm very concerned, too, about not only my safety on the road, but how the character of the neighborhood will be affected by this project. You know, there are tons of children mulling about and running around in this illustration, but we need to see what it would look like in real life. We have, like I said, a bunch of beautiful historic mill houses that attracted me to this neighborhood. I specifically lived here because of this awesome neighborhood, which all of us enjoy and love. I understand that Carrboro has a vision for economic development. I respect the need for increased commercial development and the tax accumulation that accompanies it. I understand that we have to have a way to...
Finish your thought.
Okay. I understand we have to have a way to pay for our free transportation, but I worry that having a giant hulking development may change what I love most about Carrboro. Mm-hmm.
All right. Kat Baudin and then Giles Blunden.
I also just wanted to thank you for letting us be able to speak. I think it's a really good privilege. And I'm the girlfriend who almost gets hit when people are trying to pass in the bike lane when there is a lot of congestion on North Greensboro. And that's a really big concern of mine, is what this construction will mean for the safety of pedestrians and bikers. I work for a nonprofit that promotes smart growth in small communities, mostly urban and some rural as well. And a lot of the things that we encourage communities to seek out is smaller roads. And in addition to, you know, higher density development, because I understand and respect that that's a really viable source of economic development as well as walkability and a thriving downtown. But putting it in a neighborhood that's already dense and small and historic is not a smart choice. And I think that the consequences of what that development will entail really need to be considered. And I think in addition to changing the character of the neighborhood, I think that the neighborhood really needs to be engaged a lot more in this process. The sign in front of where the development is was incorrect for when this hearing was going to be. And I think a lot of people in this area don't really know a whole ton about what is going to happen and don't feel engaged as well as they should be. So in addition to what Gabe said, I moved here for a very specific reason, to be in a place that had character, to be in a place that felt comfortable and where we could really be listened to and have good response from the local government. So my main concerns are traffic, safety, the character of the neighborhood, and what this means for the future of development, if it will really will be a Pandora's box of rapid development in a neighborhood that's already very small, dense, and historic. So that's it. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
That sign was for a Board of Adjustment public hearing, not for tonight's public hearing.
Let's see.
Was there a sign for tonight?
There were signs put up for tonight, but the signs they're referring to were for that Board of Adjustment hearing.
Okay, Giles Blunden and then David Bellin.
Hi, I'm Giles Blunden. I live in 107 Circadian Way in Carbera. I've lived here for about 20 years. I've worked here about 30 years. And I was on the 2020 visioning group that put this together, and I think this project fits in to that idea. The idea was to get more housing downtown so that the downtown is more pedestrian. I think this is affordable housing by its size. If it's two bedrooms, you can't charge more than a certain amount. So I think it is affordable housing, and we keep talking about wanting affordable housing. This affordable housing is walkable to downtown. I mean, that makes it even better. You know, the aging population can live there and walk downtown. I think the merchants downtown will appreciate the extra business. There's a lot of jobs associated with this building. There's probably $6 million worth of labor in this building process. There isn't much other building going on because of the way the housing market is right now. Apartments are what people are moving into because they can't afford to buy houses. So I think this is a good project. I know it impacts certain people. Every project does that. I mean, there's no doubt. But the bigger public good is what has to be looked at. Just think of how, you know, people talk about the size of the parking lot. But the location of the parking lot is within 300 yards of Harris Teeter. I mean, you're not going to get in your car and drive to Harris Teeter. You're going to walk to Harris Teeter. So best we have a parking lot. But I don't think it's going to impact the number of cars on this major artery, which is Greensboro Street. So I'm definitely in favor of it. I think it's a good thing for Carbera, and that's all I can say. And it increases the tax base. I mean, this is about $175,000 worth of increased taxes because it's all commercial. It's not residential in the sense that the homeowners are paying taxes. This is all commercial. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, that's what we talked about. We've talked about increasing taxes, increasing walkability. It's a lead project. I mean, the developers from here, I don't know what more you could ask for. I know some people who live downtown don't want any more people living downtown. I don't have time for that.
All right.
Thank you.
David Bellin, and then Bill Devey.
Well, hi, everybody. I won't repeat what Giles said because I agree with just about everything he said, as you know. And I think it's just what you want vision for the future. If you want more people living, working, walking, busing, biking, downtown, support this project and go ahead. A local developer who's been bending over backwards since last February to accommodate a lot of the desires that have been brought by the Board of Aldermen and by staff. So I really think it's as simple as that. What's your vision for the future? If you want an empty lot at 500 North Greensboro Street, CT zoning, things sitting there the way they are, don't approve it. Leave things the way they are. And send out a message to the business community, including a lot of the business people who've been entered into the record. Mr. Ryder didn't say the names, but I personally talked to several of them whose letters are in the record, Mac Fitch being a significant one, who's a supporter of this project, State Senator Ellie Kinnaird, who was also, I think, way back sometime, a mayor of our little town, who support this project. And I think you need to have a little political courage to have some vision and get something done, increase our commercial tax base, and have a more vibrant downtown, and not micromanage DOT and the developer, and staff can work on transportation issues and solve them. Approving or disapproving a project isn't a way to make me safer on my bike, and I bike from Pacifica to downtown every other day, and I don't think any particular project is going to change my bicycling safety. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Dave. Bill Devey and then Celia Pierce.
Hello, my name is Bill Derry.
Your handwriting is.
My handwriting is pretty atrocious. I live at 405 North Greensboro Street, which is directly across from this development. And I guess I'm going to be the fly in the ointment here. I am strongly opposed to this. And I know I sent an email to y'all probably 6 weeks ago, 6 to 8 weeks ago. Dan, I appreciate you responding to that. What I'd like to do is just read over the concerns that I had, since y'all probably know them already. I think we're in agreement that Carrboro needs more commercial development to increase the town's tax base. But to me, Shelton Station, as presented, is not the answer. It's too much of a high-density project to go in this site, and it just doesn't fit in this neighborhood. Adding such a high-density mix to this neighborhood will change the dynamic of that area forever. And I don't see this as another case of just not-in-my-backyard attitude, because if this development is approved, it will directly affect nearby properties by eliminating the front yards of several homes, one of which is mine. It will physically affect nearby properties. This is just not the place for another apartment building in Carrboro. To allow this development will impact everyone traveling on North Greensboro Street, which have traffic problems enough already. As for traffic, I have a lot of stuff listed here, but anyone traveling on North Greensboro Street knows the traffic problems. Most mornings and about every afternoon, traffic is backed up, mostly heading south to Shelton or to Weaver Street in Maine. The widening of this road is not going to do anything to eliminate that. It's going to make it easier to get into the complex and attempting to turn onto Shelton Street. This development will dump the traffic of 114 apartments and commercial business into that traffic mix, right in the intersection with Shelton Street, which is also the main corridor for traffic to Carrboro Elementary School. The traffic problem was here long before the Weaver Street resurfacing. I've lived here 8 years now, and I've seen the traffic increase every year. And now on to a more personal note for me. This development will greatly affect me personally. By the developer's own statements, if this development is allowed, the road redesign will take most of the front yards, several of these homes, three of them probably, and possibly more of several of the old mill house front yards, and yes, one of which is mine. If the full right-of-way is used, which is 6 feet in from the sidewalk, the back of the sidewalk, I could lose 6 more feet of my yard. That would put my front porch 7 feet off the sidewalk. That amazes me that I'm even talking about that. But it means the loss of my front yard and possibly the loss of a house or the property of the front yard at 407. Surely there has to be some safe distance that is required between the main traffic corridor and somebody's front yard. I've lived here 8 years trying to redo that old mill house in the gardens and trying to restore what once was. And I'm trying to keep this old home house up, and I stand a chance of losing what I've worked on for this development. Mm-hmm. The potential loss of a few homes and a complete redesign of the road seems a high price to pay for just another apartment building here in Carrboro. I see this as eventual chipping away the historic section of Carrboro, and where does this begin and end? And
right there, I guess.
I guess so.
Love you, Barton.
Well, thank you. Enjoy it while you can, because I'm not sure it'll be there too much longer.
Thank you. Celia Pierce, and then David Arneson.
Hi, I'm Celia Pierce, and I'm really disproportionately nervous about talking tonight. I've never addressed the board before, but I feel very strongly about what is being proposed at Shelton Station, and I wanted to talk to you. I grew up here in Carrboro, Carrboro Elementary, even when it was in this building. Chapel Hill High. I was around a long, long time. I left for a number of years. I've been back for about less than a year. And I've moved back into the home place, Bonnet, which is on the corner of Oak Avenue and Shelton. I'm one block from where this would be. Not exactly in my backyard, more like in my face. I did want to get involved in the community, and I got Vision 2020 and read it, and got really excited at the ideas that are in it. I have been told it's non-binding. What I'm hearing, though, is that different people are selecting different parts of it to really cotton to, I guess, to use a southern phrase. And the parts of it that really impressed me were the commitments to maintaining the character of Carrboro. I am against the Shelton Street Station, and here's why. The traffic in that neighborhood is already horrendous. Adding more traffic and adding the turns in the area at the end of Shelton Street do bring about some very dangerous conditions. I live only a couple of blocks from Harris Teeter. I don't walk there. I don't dare walk there because I have to cross Shelton. I mean, Greensboro Street. And I can only do that at very certain times of the day. You know, I'm hearing about people losing their front yard, and I understand the legalities of right-of-way. But I have to ask that just because we can do something, does that make it the right thing to do? Remember that the mill houses were often built at the front of their lots so they could have the gardens out back. So you'll find a lot of the older homes are very close to the roadways. And that's a very dangerous precedent where we ignore the historic value of those homes just because of the right-of-way. I also feel very strongly that the concept of the plan is discordant with the neighborhood. Now, I'm not against a development in that neighborhood. No, it doesn't need to sit empty. But something does need to come about that you don't feel jarred every time you look at it. I think we need to maintain the neighborhood integrity and the appearance of that neighborhood. I'm concerned about the parking, and I live in an area where parking is at a premium. I don't think people will not use cars. I think there are very few homes, very few apartments that have only one car per apartment. So you're really, again, increasing the density of traffic in the area. And that's a whole lot more people to put in that area. And that does kind of worry me a little about, you know, how are we going to accommodate that many more people? What does it do for safety in the area? We might not have everything in Carrboro that we want to have. I think now is the time for us to start making value judgments, balancing what we want against what we have. Thank you.
Thanks very much. David Arneson and then Braxton Fushi.
Hello. I live on Mulberry Street with my wife, Sarah. So we're just a few hundred yards to the north of this property. I spoke about it last time, and I wrote an article to the Carrboro Citizen. I'm in favor of the project. I think it's a good project. I think, in general, the concept of mixed-use, higher-density projects are good for any urban downtown setting. Walkable communities are inherently green, much more so than any kind of suburban development. I think it's a good project. I think the size of the building, the front building, I think is roughly 60 feet wide or something like that. Is that correct? It's set back from the right-of-way on the east side to align with the home that's immediately to the north of it. And the front part of that building is only two stories tall. It then steps to three stories tall. That seems perfectly reasonable for me for fronting on a major artery leading into downtown. The back building is four stories tall. That building is, I think, 250 feet back from the North Greensboro public right-of-way. So I'm not at all concerned about the size of that or the scale of it being too intimidating for North Greensboro Street. It's adjacent to the Fitch Warehouse number 4 and the Southern States property. So the footprint of the building, the heights of the building, the scale and size of it, I don't think it's out of character for that part of Greensboro Street at all. And I think it's going to be good for the community. This is the kind of project we should be encouraging. More people living, working downtown, walking to our shops and restaurants. I think it's a good project. Thank you.
Thank you. Braxton Fushi and then Joel Kreuter. Kreuter. I just call him Joel.
Braxton Fushi, 100 Wigan Street. On June 4th, in preparing for the department hearing, your staff wrote, as designed, this project would result significantly in an increase in traffic, changing the look, the feel, and the scale of North Greensboro Street at this location. I stand by those words. I'm not opposed to this project in the right place. I do not think North Greensboro Street is the right place for this project, based on what your staff said. This is a quiet residential neighborhood. The scale of this building is going to look like what we see at Greenbridge in a neighborhood. And if you don't think students are going to find the money to move in these places, get your head out of the sand, because that's what they're going to do. They all over town, based on what your staff said, they find a way to get in there, and they're going to get in there. The next question is, where do we stop? Do we stop at Pleasant Drive? Are we going that far into the neighborhood? And the traffic is going to be tremendous. It already is. I leave work at 4 o'clock. And it takes me a good 20 minutes to get home from Carver Middle School. So, please, listen to the neighbors. There was a statement that you didn't think there was much opposition to this project. And now you see it. Thank you.
Joel K.
I'm not against a project such as this. Well done. The matter of traffic is, it's a huge one. And I don't know that there's any way to get around that. Right now, you could stand out at the intersection of Shelton and Greensboro and watch accidents almost happen. And they will happen. And adding another 114 residential units and commercial space, it's going to make it much worse. And traffic along Shelton through that neighborhood, as my neighbor pointed out, is horrendous already. If it could be set back, if it could be reduced, gentlemen, the applicants have put in a tremendous amount of work, I'm sure, to get it to this point. But half the size, set back, no widening of the road, I would have no objection at all. As it is, I'm registering it, and I'm vociferous. Don't like this, we'll fight it.
That was 1 minute and 5 seconds, people. That's a record. Let's see if anybody can beat that. Stephen Gordon, and then James Carnahan.
When I first heard of this plan, I took a look at the map, Google Map, and I saw the proposed area for Shelton Station was roughly a little bit larger than Cedar Court, 506 North Greensboro Street. I live at 600 North Greensboro Street. I walk my dog through that neighborhood all the time. I took a look at Cedar Court, and I realized there are 50 dense placed units, apartments in Cedar Court, two-bedroom, two-story apartments. And yet this proposed development is asking for up to 114 units plus two, three-story retail space on a piece of land that is not much bigger than Cedar Court. I think that is just too much for that piece of land in that particular neighborhood. I think it is far too dense. Many people have touched on the traffic and other problems of that nature, but I think this is just far too much for that neighborhood. And if it is proposed, it goes through as it's proposed right now, we're going to have to live with that for decades and decades and decades. And I think in the long run, the town of Carrboro will be very unhappy with that. I'm all for development. I'm all for that development and dense development downtown, but I think it has to be done right on a case-by-case basis. And I think this particular proposal for this particular site in this neighborhood does not work. Thank you.
James Carnahan and then Dan Robertson.
See if I can beat that minute and five. This project will put about 200 people, plus or minus, within a five-minute walk of almost all of our businesses in the downtown. I think it's entirely consistent with the economic goals. It supports them in the sense of the jobs it'll create to build it, the traffic it'll bring to the businesses we already have, and the encouragement it'll give to other people who we want to develop in our downtown. And I encourage you to approve it. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks. All right. That was pretty good, James. 35 seconds. Dan, this is going to be a challenge.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
You can take 3 minutes.
So, I didn't come here knowing that I was going to speak tonight. I live at 405 Waterside Drive, which is about a two-mile walk from my house to downtown. So that's a traffic pattern I use all the time. And everyone has spoken to the issues of traffic and density and the wrong thing in the wrong place. So I have a couple of questions that I think we need to consider. One is, I think we need to reconsider the notion that Carrboro is an urban environment. If we start from the premise that this is an urban environment, an appropriate project for an urban environment, maybe it is. Greenbridge would have been a great project in Richmond, Virginia, but it wasn't the right project for here, and I think we have to keep that in mind. The other thing is, and this is a very educated and enlightened community, so I'm sure many of you have heard about this new report, a new book that's been written about the next industrial revolution that talks about the things that are really going to be important moving forward: oil, arable land, and water. And I think that we really need to consider, as we look at development, the long-term implications of that as we put more stress on our environment. Yes, people can walk from that to Harris Teeter, but they have to do a lot more than just walk to the grocery store or to a downtown restaurant. And most of those 228 potential cars are not going to be sitting in the underground parking lot at Shelton Place. They are going to be on the roads. Carrboro is not an urban area. It is not a project for the new urbanism. It is a different commodity, and we need to look at it as a different commodity and come up with different solutions than just applying what works somewhere else and greasing projects through that use the words like LEEDs and green and mixed use and sustainable, and using that as the driving force for how development happens here. Development should be organic. That's why those mill houses are there. They developed slowly over a long period of time, and now we're all in a much more accelerated development period. But that doesn't mean that we have to not step back and say, hold on, how do we develop and create a more organic growth pattern than we have now? And I'm really concerned that you will put something that looks like 54, what they built on 54 in downtown Carrboro, and say, gee, we have squeezed the goose that laid the golden egg, and then the goose will be dead.
Okay. I'm kind of afraid to ask whether there's anybody else who didn't sign up that wants to speak, but I will check. All right. Thanks. Board members, does somebody want to lead us off? Jackie?
Well, I think there's still, things are still very open and that there are unresolved issues. I can't imagine that we're going to vote on this tonight. We usually don't vote on controversial issues on the night of the public hearing.
Are you waiting for somebody to corroborate that?
Yeah, I'm kind of throwing that out there. Well, no, I do not feel like we need to vote on this evening. I think there are particular issues about the road and its impact on the neighborhood, just to name one, that haven't been resolved yet, and other things that seem to be not really nailed down. And I think if this is passed this evening, or when this is passed, Trish has let us know that we're pretty much passing what we have in front of us with very little room for changes when it moved on to the next stage. That and, you know, we finally got word out to the neighbors, and I think it's become a controversial issue. We usually don't vote on nights of public hearings.
I would like to see the possibility of having more public input. Several folks alluded to it, and I know that in the past we've had charrettes so that we could get some feedback from the community on what they would like to see with this footprint. We did it at for the corner of Weaver.
Eubanks. Was it Eubanks? And
no, I'm talking about downtown. Weaver and Greensboro. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, I think, you know, looking at the traffic question is one question, but also looking at, as neighbors realize and the neighborhood realizes that, commercial is a budding mill house residential, and that at some point those sites, are, those footprints are going to be transitioning, this would be a good time to create an opportunity to have public input.
Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting they can go back to the drawing board and have clean slate giraffe for this? Because I don't think that's what he's thinking about.
I'm not thinking about what he's thinking. I'm thinking about what that we have not had an opportunity since the charrette.
11 years ago.
Yeah, it was quite some time ago because I was involved with that. Several people who were sitting, in the public tonight were involved with that. And things have changed, and I think it's, folks realize that we have several footprints that people are looking at downtown. I'm just thinking it's a good opportunity to create not only the involvement and the input, but inform our thinking on development.
Dan and then Lydia.
Two things. I don't know if I was the person who said in September that we hadn't heard from many neighbors on this, but I might well have been because I remember being at that meeting and like thinking, really? There's no neighborhood concern about this? That just struck me as astounding. And I'm really appreciative of everyone who's come out tonight because we've heard some perspectives from people who are like on the ground in that neighborhood and who understand the direct implications of this project. So thank you all. I guess I just, for now, I just want to respond to Jackie's point. I don't really care if we vote on this tonight or at a future meeting. I have no unresolved or unanswered questions about this myself. And I guess I'll leave it for there for now. If we are going to vote tonight, I'll make some additional comments. But if we're not, I don't know about this.
I don't anticipate that, but Lydia?
I wanted to say that I like this project, and I agree with a lot of the points that have been made by folks with regard to the project. We have five different developments that we have approved for downtown Carrboro that haven't gotten off the ground yet. And whether it's this project or any one of those five projects that finally gets built, as we learned, as we kind of discussed at our last board meeting, we're going to have to rethink the way that traffic moves around our downtown. I mean, it's going to happen no matter what happens, whether we approve this project or whether those other five projects, which all include residential and commercial, whether they finally come to fruition. So that's a problem that's not going away. I will say that I am very aware of this impact that the road, any road improvements might have on the folks on the other side of Hillsborough Street. And I especially appreciate the comments of citizens who were, kind of talking about the mill houses and how they were built pretty close to the front of the lots so the gardens could be in the back. And I know where Bill lives, and I understand that that's a directly personal problem for him and his house. And to the extent that if we end up approving this project, to the extent that we can minimize or perhaps not have any impact on that side of the road, I would be in favor of that.
Sammy.
The fact that I agree with Dan, to have the public here, but one of the issues, though, and one of the things that I hope we can resolve and figure out how to facilitate is to let the public know sooner, not just for the public's sake, but also for the time and investments that the developers themselves put into it. So I don't know what it would take to maybe have a giant sign with the picture of the proposed development on the lot itself. And if it's a lot that's kind of off the beaten path, then maybe have it on a road, even though it's not necessarily on that lot. But we really need to improve that aspect of it. This is a continuation from a previous hearing where not too many people came out, and it would have put us a little further along in this process had we heard from people earlier. I find it really unfortunate the degree to which developers are dependent on the financing dictate the realities of the financing mechanisms, and it's just, I mean, I just want to express that. I don't know what we can do about it, but there is energy currently and frustration with how financing works. So just putting that out there, because there are spaces in town where these things are being thought about. And then the other question and thing that we need to address is there's a real tension between our desire for high-density mixed use in downtown and the nature of how our access is. We've got a community that's bottlenecked with regard to car access, and we have a lot of projects that have already been approved, and that situation is only going to get worse. And we need to face the fact that we've got to do something about that. We've got to choose what we want to do. It's either higher density or cars, or alternatively, it could be high density or no cars, and that may be a pretty radical idea, but it's happening all over in other places, in Europe, for example. And we're supposed to be a community that takes these kinds of different alternatives. So I would encourage us to consider ideas such as, for example, instead of having a we need a ceiling on our parking, not a floor on our parking, which is how we currently have our ordinances. We also don't have much control over our roads, so our leverage is with the parking. So to see a project such as this one and so much of it be paved is a big problem, and there are many other projects that have been proposed and that will happen again, and until we fix this issue, that's going to continue. We need to think of public spaces as more than just roads. We don't have too many truly public spaces, and we need to think creatively on how to make public spaces more friendly to not just cars and grown-ups, but also to children. And then, but specifically to this project, it sounds like the developer is open to not having it be a three-lane road, that it could possibly be a two-lane road, and that would cut out a lot of the concern neighbors are expressing with how this could impinge on their yards. The cost, of course, is, you know, how fluid traffic will be or not. But again, that's something that we have to face. I would also like to see a creative solution for, given that this is so centrally located, like I expressed in the previous agenda item, facilitating access to ground floor commercial space. It is one of the constraints of this property and the one neighboring it. We need to figure out a way in which, just because it's far off away from the road, that there has to be commercial there. We have to identify creative ways in which to make that a viable alternative. And those are my points.
Do you want to jump in? I'll go first.
You can go first.
I think, you know, the single biggest concern at this point that I have is about the traffic considerations, the width of the intersection profile that you put forward tonight. I think we do need to whatever development happens at this site, we need to figure out a way to accommodate to make that have that development be served with a narrower profile through that area. I'm open to a lot of possibilities about how that might be done. I want to throw out one specific thing for y'all to think about. It may be cost prohibitive. I don't know, but I wondered about. I believe there are very few driveways, existing driveways that access Parker Street right now. It's sort of, there's two-way traffic allowed on Parker Street, and yet it's only, I think the right-of-way is only like 16 feet or something like that. It's essentially a one-lane road, but it's used as a two-lane road. There are few or no driveways on there right now. I'm curious about the possibility of turning that into a one-way road coming, I don't know, either direction, either into the site or out of the site, and using that to reduce maybe the amount of traffic that's going through the direct intersection at Shelton and Greensboro. So I'd just like to, when y'all come back at some point, for y'all to have explored that possibility and tell us about whether there's a way to, in a cost-effective way, to integrate Parker Street into the transportation plan more for this site. You know, obviously with the idea of keeping that intersection narrower. My other specific thought about the intersection arrangements is it seems like there is your plan there showed a large amount of left turn storage to go, particularly a large amount of left turn storage to go into Shelton Street. Now the left turn, I guess, depending on the scale of your development, the left turn going into your development, you know, may need to be fairly significant. But there's seldom two cars waiting at once to turn left at that intersection into Shelton Street. There's often one, and they're often blocking people who are trying to get by. But I'm wondering whether there is a way to tighten up that left turn storage into a much smaller space, so that it would have a much smaller impact on the impact would be both smaller and to fewer lots along North Greensboro Street. I think those are my main points of specific feedback.
Well, if I understand the board correctly, we're not going to vote on it tonight.
That's
when would the board be voting on? I mean, that's just my question. Not even because I'm leaving on the 22nd.
But for the people, you're not allowed to leave until the 5th of December.
We thought maybe first thing on the agenda on the 5th, Joel.
We're going to start that meeting at 5:30 early to consider this.
Seriously. So both the developer and the residents have an expectation of when this entire matter is going to be resolved.
Yeah, it's a good question. What's the staff's thought and what's the applicant's thought about that?
Yeah, staff's given us their view on this project, so I don't know what more staff can.
I don't think the questions that have been raised tonight require a lot of staff work, although, I don't know.
The next public hearing night is January 24th.
I'll be going then.
That should provide ample time for any staff work that needs to be done.
Depending how many archers come in, right? That one.
And I mean, I don't think it necessarily has to be on a public hearing night.
There's very minimal scheduling been done into January. All of the January meetings are reasonably open.
Yeah. And when's our first meeting in January?
The 10th.
Okay, having said that, what are you asking the developer to do, if anything, between now and whatever that date is in January? Because there has to be, if you're going to say, I want to hear more stuff, or I want A, B, C, and D, then the board needs to be clear and say, I want to see A, B, C, and D. If the board is going to say, I'm going to determine whatever we decided, what we heard tonight, and Ms. Johnson can watch the video replay at home with popcorn between now and when she gets sworn in, then, you know, you need, both the developer needs to know if you want to have something come back. The public needs to know what the expectation is if you're asking the developer to come back. This is a process.
Yeah.
And if not, you know, say on January, whatever we heard or whatever we see or whatever you email to me before January at midnight is what we're going to determine, what's in the record, and we're done. But have an expectation of what that is before you leave tonight.
Well, you know, I think it would be appropriate to give the developer time to address what has been one of the major concerns that I see, and I think Mark expressed it also, this idea of the traffic, and just to kind of see how we can minimize or perhaps not in any way maybe impact the other side of the road, and then also perhaps exploring this idea of an auxiliary entrance or exit. I mean, that is, you know, that's a concern that we heard about from a lot of neighborhood folks tonight, and I don't know that we would, I think we would, it would behoove us to get that back and be responsive to those concerns.
But, you know, the other thing you heard, I'm not suggesting any way how I would vote or how I would go, is you heard concerns about density. So is there an expectation that you want him to come back with perhaps a different density? I'm just saying that because there's this balancing act between how long are you going to wait until you just say, I'm going to make a decision, up or down.
Right.
And I'm not suggesting that y'all make that decision tonight because everybody is close to evil. That's a very Southern term, and people with Southern mothers know what that is. So you may want to think about, you know, you may want to think about it. It's up to the developer because it'll be his application, and it'll be that text amendment. And I don't know if the developer, given what's in front of us, can say, I want a lower density, which would have been my follow-up question to the town attorney.
I don't think you need a new hearing for a lesser density. It could be lesser, probably not more.
Okay, then.
Jackie?
I think certainly the traffic and the configuration of the road improvements is certainly problematic, but also it is scale and it is simply how this fits in. We do not need Green Bridge on Greensboro, you know. So I think it's scale and aesthetic appropriateness for that location.
Wait, since
those are the objections.
I understand. But let me just say this because I'm getting off the board so I can say what I want to.
And then you'll stop. Is that true?
I
doubt it.
Well, I didn't say I would stop staying, have an opinion on this side of the bench. I'll eventually have an opinion over there.
I'll be able to put the timer on you.
You can put it on me if you want. Doesn't mean I'm going to respect it. I will, though, because I follow through. My suggestion is the board needs to think about long-term is to find out how to win. You know, after 12 years of being on the board, it always happens that we have these 2.5, 3-hour meetings about whether or not we're going to let somebody up the density, not up the density, put something somewhere. And at a certain point, given the if you have the goal of increasing the commercial space, there's going to have to be, whatever you decide, there's not going to be the perfect project. There's not ever going to be the perfect project because they don't exist. And so the question for both the town and the policymaking people, which are the board, is to determine what that is and live with the decision. You know, can you wake up in the morning, look at your neighbor and say, I did it for this reason, even if you don't like it? Like people complain about that big, tall thing that's up, is it 300 West, next to the looking glass. You know, and
605.
Thank you, 605. I couldn't remember what it is, 605. You know, it looks strange there, but it'll grow. It grows on you every now and then. I mean, not, you know, but I mean, that's the kind of thing y'all need to think about long term. And that's what you got elected for. That's why you ran, to make the hard decision. So don't delay it too long. Just make the hard decision and go on. Just stop fooling around. Sometimes in Orange County, I'm not finished, Sammy. Sometimes in Orange County, we take too long to make a decision we need to make in half the amount of time. That includes the commissioners. That includes Chapel Hill. That includes this existing board. We talk it to death when you have all the information. I'm not suggesting I want to make the decision tonight. I'm just saying.
Well, I don't know what you mean, but...
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
Sammy.
Green track.
So, I mean...
We do have a freshly expressed intention in part through the previous agenda item. So there is a commitment to a certain kind of mix, commercial mix and density for this spot, because there are
not for the spot.
Not necessarily for the spot. I think that's the issue where we're...
Oh, right.
That's where we are, is it for the spot.
But there is also an intent, or at least a philosophy, that we have to have mixed use. And then on the other hand, even in the 2020 vision document, an intention to have ways in which to bring people downtown without having as much parking and those kinds of things. I don't know if we'll be able to address all these concerns between now and the next time that we meet to talk about this project, but it sure would make it a lot easier and be more friendly to everyone involved to have that much more clearly defined and have. I still think that there's a huge tension between the amount of density we want downtown and the fact of these bottlenecks, the traffic that is inevitable. And we really have to think seriously about alternatives to car infrastructure and cars themselves.
All right. I'm sorry, Dan.
Yeah, I guess I just want to be very clear that for me, the road issue, this is not something I need resolved
right.
to make a decision about this. And it's taken me quite a while to come to clarity on this project because, you know, there's a lot of pros and cons. And I think the issues about the tax base, the issues about the people walking to downtown businesses all make a lot of sense. But every time I looked at it, I saw something that just didn't seem to fit in that location that I was not, as I said in the previous public hearing, I didn't necessarily think we wouldn't have more density on that spot, but it might not be this much and it might not be laid out this way. And I was talking earlier this evening about this and about my ambivalence to the one person in Carrboro whose opinion it has more impact on me than Jackie's. And this person said, well, the one thing Carrboro has going for it, really, is its charm, which several citizens said tonight. And this project ain't that. And after we had this conversation, I said, well, to really understand what you're telling me, I'm going to go watch the Lovetown video. And if anyone in the audience hasn't watched the Lovetown video, you ought to. And when I watched the Lovetown video, and I want to say, preface this comment that, you know, one thing I've learned through this process is a lot of respect for Ken and for what you're trying to do and as a developer, what you have done as a citizen of Carrboro and also as a person. But this project will never appear in a Lovetown video. It's just not the thing. And, you know, of course, not everything Carrboro ever will, you know, is, you know, our, you know, I'm not going to enumerate the things that won't. But anyway, I think that for me, I mean, I just really agree with the points the neighbors have made about the look and feel of this part of Greensboro Street, what's appropriate for that site. It's really hard for me to disappoint my friends who own the property on which this is proposed and who have a lot of money tied up there. But, you know, I just feel like I don't see what would come back to us in January that would make me vote for that. And I feel like I should let that be known now, both for the developer's sake and for the neighbors to be aware of that as well.
Ditto.
You know, if everyone feels that way, let's vote on it.
I'm not ready to vote without knowing more about this right away situation.
There you go.
Okay. So we need a motion to continue this to January 10th.
Mr. Mayor, a program note, you've got two fairly intense work session items for January 10th.
Mm.
The 17th or the 24th would really be a better student.
17. And then Michelle will be back.
Michelle will be in Africa.
Oh, it's still the 17?
That's okay. Well, is it okay, actually?
No, actually. Probably not. When are you getting back, Michelle? And you are going? Are you going away?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
I'll be here.
I'm the only one.
My motion is to continue on the 24th. So that we can give Michelle a trial by fire.
She'll enjoy it.
All right, very good.
And Mark, is there some mechanism to get more public input on the kinds of things that neighbors and public would want to see on that site before that time? Because the question, traffic is definitely one issue. The roadways are going to work is definitely an issue, but someday at some point something needs to be developed on that site and will be, in addition to other parcels that are right on that edge. And sooner rather than later, it makes sense to me to have a formalized process whereby community can come together and say, this is how I see this, and get people involved.
But only if we don't improve this
problem. Yeah, I think it depends on.
I'm just throwing it out there because I'd rather start to deal with it now than not have it documented.
I think it will really depend on. I think that's a conversation that we might have to have on the 24th. But,
you also
but,
that kind
of right, and if we voted against this, it would really be like, are the Jessies and Bellin and Pierce the property owners interested in engaging with the community? They might, maybe they're burnt out, but it would be nice to have that. But I don't want to guess what our decision is going to be at that time, because I only know mine and Jackie's vote.
How about a library?
Library shouldn't go there.
All right, now.
Library should not go there.
Okay, I was kidding.
Now I know you weren't kidding. Well, library should not go there.
Okay.
Well,
I don't that, think going
that matters not on, not before us. So the motion is to continue this to January 24th. Is there a second to that?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Matter passed unanimously.
We're going to quickly address the matter of the sewer resolution.
All right, hit me with the sewer resolution.
I move the sewer resolution.
Second.
All right. Resolution's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please, people, we have more business to conduct. You can leave silently, please. The resolution is passed unanimously. All right, and
I have an item. I think Woody has an item.
Okay.
That was Mark's dad voice.
Wow. Lydia. I've never seen that.
Lydia. Lydia, go ahead.
I wanted the board to kind of look again at our time frame of our review of the applications, because I know our committee includes Joel, and she ain't gonna be here anymore. So I just wanted to kind of bring that up so we could talk it through.
Mr. Mayor, can I interrupt for a second? I need to recuse myself.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye, Matt. So I think the way it at least my understanding, the way it currently stands is we're supposed to be, the committee, I think, is supposed to be getting a batch and reviewing it and then kind of winnowing that down to something that the whole board looks at. But I wondered if we could follow up with a time frame for that and then consider either involving all of us at some point or perhaps, releasing Joel from her.
I'm going to make the suggestion that if they come before Thanksgiving, I'll look at them and give people my opinion. If they come after Thanksgiving, then I think you should have someone, one other person do it. I don't think you should have the whole board, because the whole board
will do the
final thing, and it will take you too long. It will take you entirely too long. That's just my suggestion.
Is the review going to be?
Well, I think what we need to do is have a meeting of our committee later, hopefully late this week sometime, and
and then report back to y'all by email about how we're going to get
what the idea
is. But should we go ahead and form a successor to Joel?
No, I
did bring it up because I want to see it kind of, move along.
Oh, it is. Yeah. It's frustrating.
I don't mind, but I don't want to preclude anyone else who wants to throw it. I know Joel shouldn't have to do it.
Well, let me jump in. Can I ask you, Mr. Attorney, what would be the open meetings law considerations if we added Lydia right now to the committee? We would have four of us there, but we're meeting entirely about personnel matters. Are we still required to meet in public, or what's?
Well, I think you'd have to comply with the open meetings law in terms of announcing a special meeting, but you could immediately adjourn into a closed session. So he's going to show up as a practical matter.
Okay.
Why don't we just add Lydia to the committee?
Right.
Second.
Or whoever. I mean, I don't know.
Lydia, are you?
I haven't heard from other people.
That's fine. I just knew that. I mean, Joel. It's gracious, but she probably wants to get out of it. So,
we'll not replace Joel, but we'll add on, and Joel will cycle off at the point that she cycles off.
Yeah,
very good. All right, it's been moved and seconded. I guess that we appoint Lydia. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed.
And
can we, I guess, so our committee will meet sometime before next Tuesday, and we can kind of outline a general procedure?
Yeah. The only time I can't meet is on Friday because I have another meeting that was previously scheduled already.
I would really, if it wasn't either.
Maybe we could do a conference call.
I can't do conference calls. I really can't.
Why not?
Because I can't at work.
Oh, should
I just can't.
Well, but it doesn't necessarily have to be during your work hours.
So if it's not during work hours, I can just be there.
Why don't we, the four of us, get together right after this meeting and see if we can figure something out.
Okay.
Good idea.
Well, because that will have to be an open meeting. But anyway,
near the end of this meeting.
Dan, you had another matter.
Yeah, as quickly as possible. I have two conversations since our last meeting in regard to the possibility of bringing a Triangle Transit stop to Carrboro. The first was with David Beck, who rides the route to Durham and who said he thinks there's a lot of people getting on from Carrboro who would support that route. Coincidentally, the very next day I ran into Patrick McDonough, who said that, yes, Carrboro could definitely argue convincingly that we should have a stop. And he suggested that we have, in terms of our density downtown, in terms of our bus routes, we have a strong argument. He made some suggestions that could help us, like he suggested that the parking study indicated that the West Weaver Street lot could have some weekday spaces allocated for Triangle Transit riders, and that perhaps we could even install some covered bike parking for commuters there, all of which would impress Triangle Transit, and that, of course, we would rely on presumably Commissioner Gordon to take our message. But my motion for tonight is to take all of what I've just said and ask planning staff to bring us back in January a recommendation of how best to approach Triangle Transit about
second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded that all that stuff Dan just said is referred to the staff.
Triangle Transit.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed.
I would like for us to at some point address this memo we received.
I think we're going to try and have a discussion about that in closed session, that personnel closed session. I wanted to do it tonight, but we'll do it next week if that's all right.
Next week?
Okay. We have a meeting next week, is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
We'll have. Is that acceptable?
CBS.
I mean, it's 11:05.
Yeah.
All right, very good. That'll be our plan.
Okay, guys, can we Friday afternoon or Saturday morning?
Saturday morning.
What's that?
Oh, Saturday I can't. Harrison has a soccer game in Charlotte.
Well, Friday afternoon? Friday after work?
I'm at a conference in Elon at
okay. All right, Sunday? I mean, it shouldn't take that long, right? Just, just kind of touch base about stuff.
I'm free Sunday after 5. I have Rachel's piano recital.
Well, I mean, next.
Are you available at 5 on Saturday? On Sunday?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, because it's at 1 o'clock, so I'm hoping that by 5
it's like
there's food. There's food in the piano. First they play the piano, then there's like a reception.
What's
like?
Anytime Saturday?
Are you all talking about at 4 together or just?
Yeah.
That's a meeting.
Okay, so we post it. So we're trying to figure out
how much notice
what
do we
is
need.
You'll need
well, you can just.
That's fine.
Simple thing would be just to continue this meeting till Saturday, and whoever shows up, whether it's 3 or 4 or.
Or till to Saturday, right?
Yeah, Saturday.
So the three of us, so we'll show up Saturday.
Yeah, I'll show up
Saturday.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You don't have to be there.
Will the clerk be required?
Is the clerk somebody said?
No, clerk doesn't have to be there.
No, the clerk is not required.
Yeah, no.
Okay. We'll take notes.
I mean, the only thing I've said is go to Farmer's Market. So we can meet anytime.
We can meet Saturday, but please send an email reminding us, or I won't be there.
And I just can't be there.
And not because I don't want to.
Okay. Mark, what do you think? 11?
Okay, you need to tell.
11
is good. Okay, so the board has set the meeting at 11 o'clock.
Okay, well, you need to continue this meeting then to that meeting so you don't have to renotice or do anything else.
All right, so is there a motion to continue this meeting until this coming Saturday at 11 o'clock at Jesse's Cafe? No, at
Jesse's
Cafe.
Okay.
Jesse's.
Are you suggesting they have it here and bring it from?
Weaver Street? All right, fine.
No. But he has a look on his face.
It's just a committee meeting.
Okay.
It's time. Where are you?
It's a quick committee meeting. So.
Where you said it is fine.
Okay, that's fine.
Just,
okay. All right, second.
Jesse's
11 on Saturday.
Second.
Can you send us a reminder email?
All those in favor?
I will.
Hurry up. Aye. All those opposed?
Matter of passing now.
There you go.
Thank you.
All right.
You mentioned that reminder.
That's a lasting gift, Kathy.